four board members present, that is a quorum. Let's continue with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, I want to do a very brief chair's report, and then we'll get into the elections right away. A couple things on the agenda here. The picnic sign-up. Arlene and Jerry, can you give us an update on where things are at right now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, it took me by surprise there. This year's picnic will be done by Nui's Varsity Club again this year. Our main entree will be Italian sausage, mozzarella, stuffed pork loins. The cost for the whole meal will be $11. We're going to have buttered parsley potatoes, deviled eggs, seven-layer salad, potato salad, watermelon halved and filled with melon balls, and fruit with whipped cream on the side. Baked beans, which is a Varsity Club recipe, which has been a big favorite. It was a big favorite last year. Rolls and butter. And what's a picnic without corn and cob? We'll have that too. For beverages, we'll have homemade lemonade, milk, bottled water, Pepsi, Diet Pepsi, Mountain Dew, Sierra Mist. And the county board chair, whoever that may be, has traditionally and will generously provide the adult beverage. So if that
we forgot to ask that question at the forum right before here to make sure we got the commitments from those two.
Well, I don't believe you have to worry about it. So if that beverage is your choice, please thank the La Crosse County chair. One final note. We put a lot of work and time and effort in every year to make this picnic better each year for you. Please do not eat and run. Make arrangements to spend the afternoon together with us. Play cards, bocce ball, horseshoes, or just talk with each other. This is Arlene's and my goal. So as an added incentive to reach this goal, we will have live music and boat rides, which was provided, and all the work and done was that done by Lieutenant Commander Ray Ebert from the Fighting Coast Guard. I believe he was on our side. So we'll see you at Lake Neshonoc. Thank you. We'll all see you on August 18th. Yes. And they can pay the $11 to Ms. Benroot at any time.
Starting immediately. All right. Thank you very much, both Jerry and Arlene. When you made the comment about a lot of work going into it, 99.9% of that work is you two doing it, and we really appreciate all your work.
One additional comment, Mr. Chair. I talked to the administrator, and he is going to try to help us out there in talking with the department heads and that and seeing if they get them to stick around. I know they're very busy in that, but we're going to try to make arrangements to have them take the afternoon off.
Good.
Thank you.
Good. You didn't say who the live music was going to be. It's not you singing karaoke, is it?
The live music is by Dave Kurska, and he performs at the Moose, and he performs every Wednesday at the La Mirage. He's very good, and he'll play any type of music you like.
All right. Thank you very much. And did I see is that the sign-up sheet for the picnic is going around? I would certainly encourage you to fit that into your calendar. That's always a lot of fun, and it's really important team-building event. Arlene?
I just want to say that Jerry Sobranek will be paying for our entertainment with that fella. He talked with him last night. So I just want the committee to know that it won't come out of anybody's pocket but his. He's got big pockets.
Well, that's very nice of you, Jerry. Thank you.
Thank God for welfare.
Okay, on that note, I have a quick update on redistricting that passed yesterday. It's expected that the governor will sign that. The La Crosse County impact on that is not particularly significant. compared to some areas around the state. Our population works out, coincidentally, exactly right to have two complete assembly districts within the confines of La Crosse County. So the changes that have occurred under the bill that just passed are the 94th loses the town of Campbell to the 95th. The couple areas of the 94th that are in Monroe County now, though that's gone. 94th picks up a little bit more of the town of Shelby. That's basically it. So not a whole lot of change there. Still two assembly districts within the 94th. Within La Crosse County. And I checked with Ginny when that bill was being discussed yesterday. Some communities were talking about the expense that was going to accrue to them because of the legislature going before the local units of government. And the good news for La Crosse County is that that is not going to be an issue here. It appears that the drafters of the bill followed the new ward lines that were established earlier this year by the local governments, and so we won't have the same issues that they are having elsewhere. So good news in that respect for us. Not that we need any more bad news, considering how many elections we've had to pay for already this year. So, I mean, we still have that expense to deal with. Supervisor conference reports. Anybody have any of those? All right. Jerry Sabonic.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On July 13th, 12th and 13th, our Southwest ITBIC attended the annual conference in the Lac des Flambeaux. Steve Faber, the Vilas County Board Chair, gave the introduction along with Tom Molson, the Chair of the Lac des Flambeaux Tribe. John Lindemann from WCA was very good on speaking about the Wisconsin State budgets and effects on the Wisconsin economy. Lori Erickson from the Southwest ITBIC RS gave a buy on IBIMOCO, meaning Monroe County, and created the shelter workshop opportunities. Daryl Mayfield runs that every year, and he showed us a lot of things and new things that they're making at these handicap workshops. So social networking, we had that, Continental Breakfast. Lac des Flambeaux Paper Mill in Park Falls is still continuing, and they're still on track. And all the ITBICs all gave a report on what they've been doing and what they're going to be doing in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sabranek. Arlene Benrood.
I also attended that, so he said everything. I don't have to say anything, only I was there also.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have any reports? Okay, seeing none, that's all that I had. We'll go on to the county clerk, and we'll do the elections. I'm going to step down at this point, and the county clerk will run the committee for the elections.
At this time, we'll open the floor to nominations for the county board chair. Supervisor Kyle.
I nominate Tara Johnson.
Supervisor Kyle nominates Tara Johnson. Are there any other nominations? Supervisor Flood.
I nominate Vicki Burke for county board chair.
Supervisor Flood nominates Supervisor Burke. Are there any other nominations? Any other nominations? We will close nominations. At this time, Amy will pass out the ballots. The names are on there. Put an X on the one you would like to vote for, and then we will count those. Yes, ma'am?
I have a question for you, Ginny. When the ballots are brought forward, are they going to be opened up in front of the county board? I guess I would prefer, you know, in light of openness and transparency, I would prefer that if you have a dry erase board, open them up, mark the line, whatever. Is that possible? Instead of going in another room to do it?
So that's okay?
There's nothing wrong with that. We do that at the city hall.
Yeah,
you'd
that's
like
fine.
To be like our city hall. That's how we do it.
And if we need a recount, we're really good at recounts, too.
All right.
No, it's anonymous, so do not put your name on it. Just mark who you'd like to vote for.
But you need a photo ID to vote.
Yes, please show a photo ID.
Yeah.
With 22 votes, and that being a majority, Tara Johnson has been voted the new county board chair. With that, we now will need to elect a first vice chair. We will open the floor to nominations. Supervisor Benrud.
Thank you. I'd like to nominate Steve Doyle.
Supervisor Benrud nominates Steve Doyle. Supervisor Ebert.
It'd be my pleasure to nominate Jeff Schrader.
Supervisor Ebert nominates Jeff Schrader. Supervisor Flood.
I nominate Vicki Burke for first vice chair.
Supervisor Flood nominates Vicki Burke. Are there any other nominations? Any other nominations? Nominations are closed. Nope, use this one. Oh, we're so good at this. The ballot being handed out will have Steve Doyle's name printed on it because he is someone who expressed interest in running. There are two blank lines on there. If you would like to vote for Supervisor Schrader or Supervisor Burke, you just need to write their names down and mark with an X. When this was discussed, the names printed on the ballots were for people who expressed interest by writing letters. Their name was pre-printed on the ballot. That was our reasoning.
Was that announced to the whole board that if they expressed interest, their name would be printed on the ballot?
It was a decision that was made when the ballots needed to be made.
And who made the decision, ma'am?
It was me, Bill Shepard, Gary Engelson.
Okay, I personally find it not in the best judgment. Thank you. Does it have to be majority or the most votes, or does one get eliminated, or what's the procedure, sir?
The procedure is that, according to our ordinance, the procedure is that if one of the three candidates gets a majority in the first round, they are the first vice chair. If the candidates split the votes so that no one gets a majority, there will be a second round with the three candidates. You will vote again. Nobody gets a majority in the second round, one candidate is eliminated, the person with the least number of votes, and you'll have two remaining, and you'll keep voting until one person gets the majority. So it's the majority of the entire board, and you have your entire board here. So
they actually have to vote twice with three.
If one gets a majority, then. What the rule says, and I'll read the rule so everybody is clear, if no nominee receives a majority on the first ballot, the second ballot will include the three nominees receiving the most votes. You have three nominees. Those are the three nominees that receive the most votes. You need to vote again. This vote will eliminate one. The one receiving the fewest votes, if there still isn't a majority among the three, then you'll be voting for two the next time. If one of the three receives a majority, that person is the first vice chair. Yes.
Can one person withdraw? If one person withdrew, what would happen?
You still vote again. I mean, it's you'll be voting for two instead of three. I suppose that, you know, that's the
I withdraw.
Okay, then you have two two candidates to vote for. The one receiving a majority wins.
I didn't get to officially announce that. Vicki Burke, you are voted first vice chair.
A point of personal privilege. Thank you very much to the members of the board for that vote of confidence. I appreciate it.
Are you still going to step down?
Even though our personnel department wanted the new chair to take over with the beginning of a new pay period, which would be Monday, I think it would be more appropriate for the new chair to take over right now. So the new chair, who happens to already be the first vice chair, I'm just going to step down, and she can run the rest of the meeting. So I ask Kara to take over. I think I have a point of personal privilege. Can I swap with Ebert?
I'm not giving my Skybox up.
I know.
I will take perhaps the last point of personal privilege of the evening and thank my colleagues on the board also for the vote of confidence. I look forward to working with all of you, and including new first vice chair, Supervisor Burke. With that, I believe next on our agenda is our county administrator's report, Mr. O'Malley. No, you still
there
have Jill.
There was no change.
Jill is still second vice chair, as far as I know. No? Yeah. It was a rhetorical. No? We still have a second vice chair. That would be Jill Billings, duly elected back in. Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of quick items, and then the main item that we've got to report on is our annual audit report from Clifton Gunderson. I want to highlight a couple of items. One that's on your desk is an announcement by our landfill department, our solid waste department. They're going to have an open house with particularly the neighboring property owners to talk about entrance issues and get their input as we're evaluating progress around the discussions we've had there. So just want to highlight, you're welcome to come and listen to the input or be a part of that interaction. It's Wednesday, July 27th, Hank Cook wanted to make sure that you knew about that, that that's coming up. Again, not to present any specific ideas, but to make sure that we're accessing and having input from our neighbors out there. Another brief announcement that I wanted to mention is that last week, you know, and I'm very appreciative of the time I get off on vacation to do the ride for the Habitat for Humanity. This is my 14th year in a row, as most of you know, and I always like to announce the results of what we were able to accomplish together this year. I didn't raise as much as I usually do because the foundation in the Twin Cities that used to be able to contribute changed their standards, so I've actually got to go through a fall cycle. So the bad news is I didn't raise as much each year as I usually do, but I did exceed the goal that I had set. As you know, if you had read the letter, I was shooting to, in the 14 years I've been riding for Habitat, to exceed $300,000 in my total fundraising this year. Just this week, the total amount that I raised then was $8,422, so it just put me over the $300,000. It used to be pretty easy to hit because each year the Albert Casey O'Neill Foundation used to contribute as much as $10,000 a year, so it was an easier mark to hit when they contributed. But the good news is that for La Crosse County Habitat, that represents over $6,400. That's the largest amount I've ever been able to raise for La Crosse Habitat. $930 for Rice County Habitat and $1,093 for Twin Cities Habitat, because the people that make donations that I still have connections with in the two other communities that I used to serve
still are able to designate towards that. So I had a great week off. I'm glad it wasn't this week. This week would have been a heck of a week to bike, but 500 miles and my 14th year. I'm hoping that for the 20th year, which will be their 20th anniversary for Habitat 500, that we can get them to come back to La Crosse as they did in 2005. That will be my 15th ride for Habitat. So I try to live my principles, and thank you for your support. So many of you with either good wishes or checks have wished me well each year, and many of you are very consistent every year. So thank you so much for the opportunity to do that, and appreciate it. We do have a couple of other items that we'll go through, but I think without any further ado, let's go in order of the items that we have listed here. We have our audit presentation from the representatives of Clifton Gunderson, so I'll just see if Gary's got any introductory comments, and we do have the item that's actually on your desk as well, along with the CAFR. So.
Yeah, Renee Messing with Clifton Gunderson will be the primary speaker, but we also have Deb Welch with Clifton Gunderson, and then two folks from my department, Jonathan Edwards and Sharon Davidson.
Well, thank you very much for inviting us to the meeting this evening. I do want to congratulate you on your elections, and it was an interesting process to watch, so thanks for letting us be part of that.
We'll charge admission the next time.
In the full financial statement, you have a document that's over 160 pages long. So in the interest of time and presentation this evening, we've handed out a summary of that document, really to hit the highlights of the financial results for the year, the audit process, and certainly answer any questions that you have. On the second page of that handout, you'll see an identification of the components of the financial report. One part of the financial report that is ours as your auditors is the auditor's opinion letter. That letter says that your financial statements are presented fairly in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. So that's what bondholders and citizens and other interested parties are looking for when they review that audit opinion. All of the rest of that document is the representation and the responsibility of your management team. And one very important part of the rest of that document is the management discussion and analysis. In the large document, it goes from page 21 to page 36, and it really provides a narrative description, some information behind the numbers that kind of gives you a general overview. So if you don't have time to study the entire document, pages 21 to 36 is where I would recommend that you focus your attention. On the next page, I just wanted to highlight what some of the significant audit areas are. When we come in to perform the county's audit, we look at the systems of internal control and the areas of higher risk within the county's financial reporting system, and then we test certain transactions within the areas of more significant audit risk. You can see that those include cash and investments, including restrictions, receivables and revenue, capital assets, long-term debt, and other long-term obligations, fund balance and net assets, and of course expenses of the county. The next couple of pages talk about your governmental funds in very highly summarized form. The first column that you'll see there is your general fund. Your general fund essentially had a break-even year. You had revenues a little bit less than expenses by $67,000. For the year, and you have fund balance at the end of the year of $25.8 million. Now, that fund balance is very important to the county, and it represents a number of funds that are either reserved or designated that total about $11.9 million. Those are funds that you as a board have set aside for specific purposes or funds that are not in spendable form. A very important component of the general fund balance is the undesignated balance. That's about $13.8 million at the end of 2010. That represents about 44% of your expenses on an annual basis. And I think that it's important to recognize that that is within the policy that the county board has defined for its general fund balance. The next fund is the Health and Human Services Fund. That fund had revenues less than expenses of about $207,000 for the year. It does have about just shy of $6 million of fund balance at the end of the year. That fund balance includes some reserve funds of $1.1 million and the balance of undesignated funds that are available for expenditure for human services purposes. Your debt service fund for 2010, you can see, had $11 million of revenues and transfers compared to $3.4 million of expenditures. A little bit of an unusual year for 2010. You did some refinancings right at the end of 2010 in December, where you borrowed money in December and actually did the payoff of the other debt in January. So your debt service fund has about $7 million in it at the end of the year that was expended in the first part of 2011. The next page shows the final of your major funds, and that's your capital projects fund. This is where you account for the expenditure of most of your borrowed money. Within that fund, you'll see that you spent about $8.7 million of borrowed money during the year, and at the end of the year, you have about $891,000 remaining in that fund. Those funds are all segregated for specific purposes under the terms of the borrowings that you've done. The primary expenditures in here, of course, are for the Law Enforcement Center. The balance of the governmental funds are all lumped together, and they're referred to then as the non-major funds. And they include activities like the jail assessment fund, the business fund, the old landfill, and the health fund. Those are the most significant of those funds. They have fund balance at the end of the year of $6.6 million. Of which $2.8 million is reserved or designated, and the balance is undesignated but segregated for the purposes that those funds have been set up. So you can see that your governmental funds in total have about $46 million of fund balance, $48 million of fund balance. And I think that it's important to recognize that the county really is a business. It's the operating the business of government, and your governmental funds have about $90 million of expenditures that you account for on an annual basis. The next page converts that same information to what's called the accrual basis of accounting or reporting of governmental activities. You'll recall that a number of years ago, you were required to do this second type of reporting. This converts your information more to business-type reporting. So that fund balance is converted to net assets of $125 million at December 31st. And the significant components that you see there that make up the conversion include reporting of all of your capital assets, your land, building, and equipment, net of depreciation, some transactions related to some receivables and deferred revenues. It brings in your internal service funds, and we'll talk about those in just a moment, of $74 million. And it also accounts then for your long-term obligations that are about $59 million at the end of 2010. The next page gives you just a brief comparison of your general fund budgetary operations, comparing budget to actual. You'll see there in the middle column that your budget anticipated that you would reduce your fund balance by about $4.8 million. Your actual results reduced fund balance only by $67,000, so you had a very positive year for 2010. Just a couple of comments about the positive variance in the expenses. You had about $1.6 million of budgeted contingency funds that you didn't need to use in 2010. Those have been carried forward to 2011. You also had just shy of $1 million of funds budgeted for capital purchases that did not occur in 2010 that, again, will be carried forward into 2011. So those are the two of the most significant parts of that positive variance. The other thing that I would say there is that your department heads were very diligent in monitoring their actual results to budget, and every department came in under budget. So as you look at the detail within the statements, every department had positive variance, which is really a significant contribution by the department heads. The next slide shows you just a picture of where you spend your long-term debt money and how that debt is allocated. You can see that a big portion of your long-term debt is for the law enforcement center. That's the big blue slice of the pie there. That's about 54% of your debt service costs. I think what is equally important to note is the red pie that you slice of the pie that you see on the right-hand side is for the solid waste operation. And there's a small piece at the top that's blue for Hillview Terrace. Those are pieces of the long-term debt that really are supported by the operations of those organizations. So they don't represent portions of the debt that are paid by your tax levy. But I think this gives you a nice picture of how your debt service, how the long-term debt was used and how that repayment occurs. The next page gives you some information on your enterprise funds. These are the parts of the county that operate as business units. And there you'll see that you have two major funds, being Hillview Healthcare Center and the solid waste operation.
Can we interrupt you with a question for a moment? Supervisor Ebert, back on the
back on the long-term debt, where would the old jail be? I thought we still had debt for the old jail.
The slice of the pie that you see for the law enforcement center includes the old debt as well as the new debt.
Okay, thank you. I just remembered that. Thank you much, ma'am.
You're welcome. For Hillview Health Care Center, you'll see that their operations had a loss for the year of $310,000, and they have net assets at the end of the year of $5.7 million. Now, that includes the land, buildings, and equipment that are part of the Hillview operation. Those are about $1.7 million. So the balance of the net assets represent assets that are available for operations of the facility. I've also given you a little bit of cash flow information for Hillview, and you can see there that the cash balance in Hillview increased by $555,000 during the year and has $3.7 million of cash and investments at the end of the year. The solid waste operation is about a $9 million business unit. Mr. Geary?
Supervisor Geary.
Madam Chair, on those enterprise funds, Lakeview used to be an enterprise fund. What is it called now?
The part of Lakeview that is still within the county's operation is included in that non-major column. And what happens with that Lakeview piece is that you have an agreement with Mississippi Valley Health Services where they pay the depreciation on the buildings and equipment, and that depreciation then goes into that fund and accumulates for replacement purposes. The solid waste operation, you'll see there, had a loss for the year of $393,000, and it has a balance at the end of the year of about $5 million. Its cash flow during the year was actually a reduction of about $1 million, and it has $17.8 million of funds on hand at the end of the year. Now, within the solid waste operation, of course, you have a significant amount of investments that are on hand at the end of the year for post-closure costs that will occur in the future. That's about $9.5 million of that $17 million. Those non-major enterprise funds, in addition to the Lakeview Fund that we just talked about, it includes Carroll Heights, Hillview Terrace, McIntosh, Regent, Maplewood, Ravenswood, and the Household Hazardous Waste Program. So there are a number of business units that are within those functions. In total, they have net assets at the end of the year of $6.4 million. They have a significant investment in capital assets of about $4.1 million, so there's only about $2.4 million of more liquid investments within the combination of all of those funds. They do have cash and investments at the end of the year of $5.5 million, and you'll see there a fairly significant increase in the cash and investments during 2010. A portion of that debt refinancing that I mentioned earlier is within the fund there, about $1,050,000. So that increase in cash is a little bit inflated as a result of that, just that timing difference. The final fund types that you have are called internal service funds. These are funds that provide services.
Supervisor Bina.
I didn't want to stop her in the middle of something.
That's okay.
You said that it's going to cost us $9 million for the closure of the...
Microphone, please.
...of the solid waste. That is the new system we got out there, not the old system, because the old system is closed down.
Right.
So we have to put $9 million into a pot like we did for the old landfill years ago, because we had to borrow money to put it in there.
Right.
Now...
So you've got $9.5 million already set aside for that purpose.
Okay, so I hope that stays there, because we don't want to go borrowing against that now.
Oh, no, definitely.
Okay, good enough.
Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding the bottom line versus cash and investments, you don't delineate those two items, but approximately how much money is allocated towards investments and how liquid are those investments versus cash?
Within solid waste or?
Well, within solid waste, within any of these funds.
For the way that cash and investments are handled, and Gary, feel free to chime in anytime, but the way the cash and investments are handled really is that all of the county's cash and investments, other than the solid waste restricted investments and some other minor restricted investments, are pooled together. And then that pool is allocated out to all of the funds. So when we look at Hillview Healthcare Center as an example, we consider that all to be liquid funds within Hillview because they just have equity in the pool of cash that the county has. So if you were to go into the footnotes to the financial statements, you would see the total amount of investments versus short-term cash, and that would be...
It starts on page 66. There's actually five pages dedicated to explaining your question, Mr. Burns.
So on page 67, you'll see the breakdown of the types of investments that the county has. Yep. So on the next slide, you'll see those internal service funds. These are funds that provide services to the county as a whole. There are basically two types of these funds. The largest of them is the self-insurance fund, but certainly not of lesser importance is the county highway fund. You'll see there that the highway had a change in net assets of a reduction of about $20,000. They have net assets at the end of the year of $67 million. Very important to note that the vast majority of that net asset number is the investment in land, buildings, and equipment that are used in the highway function. There's about $5 million of that represents more liquid assets, cash and receivables, that will ultimately convert to cash. The highway fund had an increase in its cash balance of $654,000 during the year, and it has cash at the end of the year of $4.4 million. The self-insurance funds include really three functions for the county. They include workers' comp insurance, employee health insurance, and liability insurance. Those funds have a balance at the end of the year of $10.4 million, and you can see that they had increase in their net assets of $2.1 million for the year, and they have cash and investments at the end of the year of $11.5 million. Those cash and investments, again, are set aside for losses that may occur relative to liabilities of the county or workers' comp or health insurance claims. So that seems like a lot of information, and it is a lot of information. Compared to the report as a whole, it's very highly summarized. But I do also want to just bring to your attention that a large portion of the document is the disclosures, the footnotes to the financial statements. And these that you see listed here are the most significant of those footnote disclosures, including the deposit and investment disclosures that we just referred to. The last one that I want to bring to your attention there related to the disclosures is future changes. I think that when we look at the county's financial reporting system, you all have done a great job in gaining an understanding of the reporting of fund balance within all of the funds of the county, what's reserved, what's designated, and what's undesignated. Unfortunately, that's all going to change. The Governmental Accounting Standards Board has adopted statement number 54, and that will change the components of fund balance reporting beginning with the 2011 year. And your fund balance components will change to the categories of non-spendable, restricted, committed, assigned, and unassigned. And so as you go through your budget process here, beginning shortly, you'll begin to see those changes come into the budget process first and then into the final financial reporting system. So there will be a little bit of an education process for really all of us as we go through that conversion process in 2011.
Supervisor Ebert.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Chair. What is OPEB?
OPEB is other post-employment benefits, and for the county that represents the liability that you have for providing health insurance to retirees. Your retirees receive health insurance at the same rate that your currently active employees pay, and so as a result there is a liability, a theoretical liability relative to the fact that a retiree should have a higher rate than a younger person. And so that liability is, as I recall, it's about $161,000.
Okay, so that would be increased. Their factor of getting sick would be greater because they're older?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
At least in theory. The audit process also includes two other pieces of information that we issue to you. One of them is called the audit communication letter. And that letter identifies the auditor's responsibility under generally accepted auditing standards. As I mentioned at the start of the comments, our responsibility is to test your systems of internal control and your account balances. It's really management's responsibility for the underlying records and financial statements and execution of controls. The letter talks about significant estimates that are used in your financial reporting process, and that's probably the most important part of that letter. Maybe of equal importance to all of you is to know that there were no audit adjustments processed as part of the audit process. What that means is that your financial information that you receive on a day-in, day-out basis is really of very high integrity and can be relied upon. The letter also says that that there were no disagreements with your management or no difficulties in the audit process. And then the last piece is a document called the management letter. And the management letter identifies items that are recommendations for improvement. Now, when we issue a management letter, there are three types of comments that we could provide. There would be material weaknesses in internal control, significant deficiencies in internal control, and other matters. So all of these things that you see here fall under that third category called other matters, and that is important because these are things that are more administrative, things that should be taken care of, but don't rise to the level of being significant weaknesses in internal control. We've identified basically three different recommendations. One is related to approval of time reporting. During our testing, we identified that a couple of departments within the county weren't complying with the policy for time reporting approval. That has been corrected in 2011 as soon as we brought it to management's attention. The other items related to internal technology are related to really some process of assigning user rights within the finance department, and also to have department heads review the user listings to make sure that the rights that are assigned within the system are appropriate for each individual, that they're maintained on a timely basis for any changes in personnel that you have. And the third item that you'll see there is a process for review of journal entries, and there was a significant process during 2010, and we would expect to see full compliance with the changes that have been adopted in 2011. What I'd also just like to mention is that there were a number of other comments in our management letter in 2009. All of those comments were addressed by management during the year, and I wanted to highlight a significant process that the finance department went through as a result of the 2009 audit. They put together what they called a training summit. They brought all the department heads together to review all of the county's financial policies and to really instill the need for compliance with all of the internal controls and to provide instruction on how to comply with those policies. So I think that that was really a great effort on the part of the finance department during the year. As a part of that process, they also updated the policies and procedures manuals. So again, good integrity in the performance of the internal controls within the county. Just kind of in closing, I wanted to thank Gary and Sharon and Jonathan and the rest of the finance staff for the efforts that they put in preparing for the audit process. And in particular, I want to just note that Sharon and Jonathan did a fabulous job in putting together that full 163-page document. As I mentioned, the auditor's report is ours, and that is really and truly the only part that we did this year. They did just a fabulous job, and I want to commend them for that.
Thank you. I'm assuming there's a corollary reduction in rate for the amount that you'll be charging.
I'll have to also mention, and I too want to acknowledge all the work that Jonathan and Sharon put into it. Again, we received the Certificate of Excellence in Financial Reporting from the Government Financial Officers Association, which is really a peer review. But the reports that Sharon and Jonathan and Sean Hanlon and Frank put together in our department are really top-notch. I also, though, want to talk about, as far as reduction in fees, I have to also thank Renee and Deb and their other auditors for all of the guidance and expertise that they provide us through the year. I mean, governmental accounting changes on a regular basis. We have webinars that we attend and so forth and so on, but we do rely on these two ladies quite often. We pick up the phone sometimes once a week, sometimes more than once a week, to get their expertise and guidance. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're gracious enough to take questions as we interrupted you, sprinkled throughout. Are there any other questions? Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two of them. I had a little time. I read through the majority of your book, and I had a bunch of questions, but I will keep those till budget time. The question I had is on page 72 to start with. It is in the area of the TIF for the Park Plaza. If I read this right, on the bottom of the page, we are throwing out and waiving the collection of $554,000, $96,000, and $650,000. That's $1.3 million. Is that true or is that not true?
We are not waiving the collection of those items. The $554,000 that was part of the City of La Crosse Park Plaza TIF is recorded as receivable, and there was a reserve recorded against it because it wasn't going to be collected on a current basis. Your management feels that at some point in the future that balance will be paid, but we can't predict when that's going to be.
Oh, so you're just offsetting it for the time being?
Correct.
Okay, we aren't throwing out the $1.3 million because
no.
If we would have been doing that, we should have sold it right away. We would have been $800,000 in the hack, but we would have been better off selling it right away, and then we would have been better off. Okay, that answered my question.
Great.
On page 78, I have another one. And that is, my concern is the amount of borrowing that we're doing, that we're building and we're remodeling, and we're, I expressed that view any number of times here at the county board meeting, and I realize that we're way under the amount that we are eligible to do. You know, we can go up to $358,000 or something like that, it says in the book, $1 million. My concern is, I got two different readings on this. On one page, it says we are borrowing $60,234,000 for one category, and for business, it's $34,636,000. And I haven't got the line right here. I got it written on my paper here, which totals up to $94,870,000. Now, that's a bundle of money we're paying for, and we're extending our payments out longer and longer, and county board members 25 years from now are going to be paying for the things we are doing today if we're going to keep on going. But on the other hand, I go back to page 155, and there it says we're only in hoc $68,508. And I don't know why there's a difference in those figures. And I was wondering why that could be. Are we talking about something different on the page 155?
The amount that you see back on page 155 is only the general obligation debt, so it doesn't include
the business part of it?
The business part of it.
Okay, because the general obligation on the other page was $60 million. And back there at $68 million, so there's only a minor discrepancy of $8 million. I don't know. I was trying to figure that out, and I couldn't.
Rick, one of the things that makes this report unusual this year is that debt that you issued for refinancing at the end of December skews those numbers. So it skews the amount of debt that you have outstanding at the end of the year. That about $8 million went away in January of 2011.
And I realized that after reading through this thing, because it can go either way real fast depending on what you do in the January payment schedule. If you would pay it in December, our finance statement would look real good the year before, but next year it might not look so good. So it's the January payment of some of these that...
And it was that unusual transaction of doing refinancing right at the end of the year.
And the interest rate is good, and I realized that we did a good deal by doing it. But my big concern is the amount of money we're spending on debt service. And the more we spend on payment of debt service, the less we have available for a lot of other things we're doing in our county. So, okay.
Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gary, of the changes recommended, are we going to implement all of them, or if not, why not?
Yes, we will work towards implementing all of them.
Any other questions of the folks from Clifton Gunderson? I would add on behalf of the board our thanks to the finance staff and to Clifton Gunderson folks, and we look forward to seeing you back here. Thank you.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Mr. O'Malley?
Yes, just a couple of quick items. I noticed that there were questions about the ordinance regarding waterway markers and regulatory. Let me try to help people understand. Anytime we do something jointly with another entity like the city, there are always overlaps in how we do their processes, how they do their processes, and so I'll give you a quick history lesson on this and just try to zero in on exactly the decisions that were made related to this. Back in 2007, the city and county decided to merge their harbor commissions into one body, calling it the City-County Harbor Commission. At that time, one of the issues that came up was as those two are merged over that period of time, the concept is that staffing of that commission would be 3 years with the city, then 3 years with the county, and keep rotating back and forth so that there was a sharing of that responsibility.
It was our understanding that the majority of work with the Harbor Commission is primarily a committee function, minutes, agendas, responding to those types of things, and that the enforcement issues that are involved are primarily done through law enforcement, generally the county, but either the county and city actually do the patrolling. One of the issues that's come up over the last couple of years in particular is that to have quality enforcement of the entire area, you need to rely on the buoys that are placed, and that the buoys, to be able to be enforced by law, need to be located exactly where they're supposed to be. And unfortunately, many of the landowners or the adjacent owners to the property, when they end up placing their buoys, they aren't designated by GPS on where they're actually placed, and that it's up to the Harbor Commission in some way, shape, or form to go back in and be able to actually verify that the location of the buoy is correct, or move it and actually end up dealing with that. Up until the county took over staffing this calendar year in 2011, those minor kinds of issues were actually being dealt with by city staff. We don't have sufficient staffing in our main department that deals with this, which is UW Extension, to go beyond just providing staff support to a commission to go out in the boats, to do the GPS, to actually relocate the buoys. And it was my determination in working with Carl Green, who is our main staff person and responsible through UW Extension for the next 3 years of county staffing, that we shouldn't be responsible for doing that. The Harbor Commission discussed this. They made their discussion and decision that the best way to deal with this was to have a small fee involved with doing that, to actually utilize an outside contractor to verify the location rather than city or county staff doing that. And the Harbor Commission, in their April action, recommended a joint ordinance, one that went to the city and was adopted. And the city, in their case, actually, as part of their ordinance, lists what their fees are. And when they adopt an ordinance and establish a requirement for a license or that type of thing in this case, their ordinance actually states the $2 amounts that we've talked about, which is $5 per buoy marker in Pool 7 and $10 for permitted signs in both of the other pools. In our ordinance, we don't list ours. As you'll recall, when we put our fees and charges in, we do that in that master list as part of our budget. Well, at the time we adopted our budget last year, when you adopted the budget and that entire fees list, there was no knowledge or anticipation that there was going to be a fee involved with this, because it was too early in the process. It was actually after the first of the year that the Harbor Commission came to this conclusion. By the way, as another illustration of all of the collaboration, we also recognized, and the county clerk volunteered, that she could end up in her office receiving the fees for that type of thing and actually accounting for it, because that was another item that had never been dealt with by establishing this fee. So I'm probably giving you more devil in the details, but that's why we didn't bring in a separate resolution and why our ordinance doesn't address that. So where does that put us? The issue is that the Harbor Commission has established under their authority that this would be the way to deal with having a fee, having a location for owners to actually verify by GPS where their buoys are actually located, and the City Council has adopted that ordinance with those fees. Our ordinance doesn't address the fees specifically. So you can give us additional direction. Either one, just expect us to clean that up when we do our full fees list for next year and just assume that it's such a small fee and that it shouldn't be a large issue, that we'll comply with the city's ordinance and the city's portion of that based on the recommendation of the Harbor Commission. Or you could direct us to bring back a resolution that would establish those fees separately and amend our entire fee list. Or give us other direction. If you just think we're that the Harbor Commission and county and city staff are on the wrong direction and you'd like to have this on a future agenda item to deal with differently, give us that direction. But again, this is one of those issues that when you do something jointly with the City of La Crosse, they have their procedures that are slightly different than ours, and so it shouldn't be a large item, but I hope I've given you as much background as you wanted on why did we have this fee that wasn't in our schedule of accounts, because we don't arbitrarily just establish establish new fees that don't have county board authority and county board approval. This is the complexity of it is because of the joint relationship in merging two harbor commissions into one.
Supervisor Schrader.
So is that clear as mud?
Clear as mud. We're about to get more clear as mud here. Supervisor Schrader.
I'm going to ask a question and that may not be germane. It may be germane. Who is going to determine whether they're in the city or the county then? And I'm assuming that these that are no wake buoys that are going to be placed outside of the no wake zones.
You know, that's a technical answer. I don't
Carl,
know. Carl or Don might be able to answer that.
Let's get Carl in here and see if he can answer that. Or don't come in if you can't answer it, Carl.
21 people. And five of those.
Could you repeat the question? I didn't quite hear it.
We have no wake zones.
Correct.
Do the county no wake zones and the city no wake zones overlap each other? And are these fees, who's going to determine whether they're in a county or whether they're in a city? And I am assuming that the fees are going to be levied against the people that decide that they want a no wake marker put outside of their boathouse or dock or whatever it is.
The fees are paid by the people that have the no wake marker. It would be the sheriff's department that would be enforcing them. So it would be whatever jurisdiction or municipal boundary that area is within. So if it's in the town of Campbell, it would go to the county. And I assume that if it's within the city, it would somehow get then reimbursed to the city.
Who's going to keep track of that? Because there's a lot of places over in the Comas, for instance, that are, some of them are in the town of Campbell, some are in the city.
Yeah. I would assume it would be the sheriff's department, and because they're the ones writing the tickets.
So what I'm getting at is who's going to collect the money?
Don, can you help?
How are you going to figure that out?
Hang on for a second. Let's see if
the ticket is independent of the fee that I'm talking about, though. The fee is in relation to the placement and the cost of verifying the placement of that buoy, that it is by GPS, that it is in the right place, that can be verified. The tickets is a separate enforcement issue that's not related to the item that I was responding
tickets.
To in the ordinance.
Who's going to receive the revenue?
Right. Let's hear from Supervisor Meyer, because he thinks that he can help answer the question.
It's based on permit holders. Right now there's 21 permit holders, and they're the ones that they're going to police. To date, five have paid the fee, and I'm not sure where that's going. Bill will tell us that. So that's how, there's no other list, that's it.
And right, are Carl? The permit holders in a particular municipality?
Well, they could be whoever filed to get a permit.
Right, so I think Supervisor Schrader's question is, do in the collection of the fees from the 21 permit holders, do we know in which municipality they are so we know?
I'm sure we do.
Yes,
yeah.
We
where
do.
The fee
we,
goes.
Yes, we know we that. I thought you were asking.
Was that
about
your question, Supervisor Schrader?
That is, but I, people just put out these no wake buoys, and I thought that's what you were addressing.
That's what we are trying to address, is to get the ones that aren't permitted out, because it's the ones that aren't permitted that's causing the mix-up with the enforcement.
So did that answer your question, Supervisor Schrader? Are we good? Okay. Supervisor Bina.
My question was answered.
Supervisor Feehan.
I thank the chair. I'm very confused by this, and being as my constituents are directly affected by it, I'd like to understand it better. The Harbor Commission has jurisdiction over levying this fee. Is that correct, or does this body not have jurisdiction? And is this a county ordinance? Or I'm confused about that aspect of it.
We merged two harbor commissions. Their authority used to be independent, now it's together. Technically, any action by the harbor commission should be ratified by both the city council and county board. because the city council, when they adopt their ordinance on something like this, actually lists their fees, it's slightly different than ours because we never list our fees in our ordinance. We put it in that entire schedule. So this body could give us different direction than what's been recommended by the Harbor Commission. We'd have to go back through the whole process. Technically, it's a dual authority by both because that's what we did when we merged that. So
at present, no action has been taken by this body in regard to that ordinance and establishing that fee?
Actually, this body has adopted the ordinance. The question was about the fees that weren't listed in the ordinance because it was listed in the city ordinance.
And it takes both bodies to...
And so...
So you could give us different directions.
People that have these minimum wage boys who wish to go through the permitting process, where they go varies based on which municipality they're in or township?
No. This is a joint harbor commission. It's one process for everybody, whether you're in the city, town.
So they come here to our county government to get this permit, or where do they go?
That's the process that we've got set up, is governed by the Joint Harbor Commission. The county clerk would actually be able to receive that and has an accounting system to do that. The Harbor Commission hires an independent contractor, I believe Marion.
Well, Barber. The U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary.
A U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary that actually goes out and verifies the GPS placements, so they have some expertise, all again under the authority of this joint commission.
So our neighborhood association, which has been wondering, incidentally, mm-hmm. where our minimum wage boys are at, they should go to the county clerk's office to get a permit to put those boys back out. No? I see... You're shaking your head. No.
It is a complicated process. The DNR issues the permits actually to the Harbor Commission. The Harbor Commission is the permit holder, and they establish the permits on behalf of the people that request the no-wake buoys. So previously, when there was two Harbor Commissions, it caused this confusion because which Harbor Commission, as Mr. Schrader was pointing out, especially on Nokomis Avenue, would you be in? With the Joint Harbor Commission, there's one. And so that was what we were, you know, it was part of the reason of combining the two is to make it less obtuse and hard to understand.
So the process is that they go to the county clerk's office and get the application, and then they have to appear at a meeting of the Harbor Commission?
They would make a request to the Harbor Commission, and we would send it into the DNR.
Is there a formalized process for that, or forms? Are those obtained at the county clerk's office? How does the process start?
So the process would start at the Harbor Commission.
And
they would request, and they could do it via a letter requesting a no-wake buoy permit. Any type of buoy that is placed in the Mississippi River needs some sort of a permit issued.
So does that include the Black River? That's the Black River.
That would be the Black River as well. Yeah.
All right. So
within a navigable water.
So the procedure is that a letter should be sent to the Harbor Commission requesting the placement of these buoys.
Requesting a buoy, if it's a new buoy, if it's somebody that doesn't have an existing buoy, because currently we have an inventory of all the buoy permit holders.
Okay.
So it goes to the Harbor Commission. The Harbor Commission sends a new application into the DNR. Because it's the DNR that is the approving body.
So if it's an existing buoy, then they're grandfathered in. They don't have to go through that.
As long as it's existing within. If it's just somebody has traditionally put it out there but hasn't alerted the Harbor Commission, that's not a traditional buoy. It has to be one that the Harbor Commission has record of.
Now, what is the fee for each buoy?
It was, I believe, $10 in pool 8 and $5 in pool 7.
Chairperson.
Supervisor Mettinger.
Yeah, this is listed on here as a county administrator's report. It is not listed on here as a debate by the full county board. If it is screwed up with the Harbor Commission, the Harbor Commission should fix it and not try to micromanage it here on the floor of the La Crosse County Board. I think this debate is inappropriate.
I'm going to rule that out of order. The agenda came on. Well, I'm glad I'm able to maintain that tradition. But this is on the agenda because there were supervisors who asked questions after the ordinance, and Mr. O'Malley was trying to clarify that. So I think that it is appropriate that we have this conversation. I am sympathetic to the duration of the conversation.
Thank you.
Does that do it for you, Supervisor Fien?
Can I also clear up?
We do have a couple other questions. Are you clarifying with Mr. Fien?
I just want to clarify, too. You said that, neighbors were wondering why the buoys haven't been out. That's probably more related to the river elevation because for quite a while the river had been over flood stage. And so we asked that, I believe the way that we put it in the letter is that after May 15th or 10 days after the river has dropped below 8, river elevation of 8.
Supervisor Ebert.
So there's 21 permit holders. So permit holders can hold more than one buoy?
They can. A permit holder may have more than one buoy in their permit, yes.
Okay, that's good, because I was going to say if we did all this for a maximum of $210 and then contracted out, sometimes we're better off just to pick up the tab and, not really diddle with it. Thank you.
Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kind of along the same lines he's thinking. Okay, let's say the Harbor Commission sets a no-wake zone, and it extends for a certain length. Well, at some point it ends. So they were talking about some of the wealthier property, obviously, that was up on Nokomis, and there's other areas on the south end of town. Somebody a half a block up from where it ends gets a buoy. Somebody a block up from that gets a buoy. Somebody up a block of that gets a buoy. To me, instead of having all these buoys, why wouldn't you just, in essence, is it has extended the no-wake zone another 3-4 blocks, half mile, or whatever, just by 3 or 4 people getting a buoy, because you couldn't accelerate and stop every 100 feet or something, you know, 100, 200. So why doesn't the Harbor Commission consider just extending some of them no-wake zones, in, especially when there's wealthier property involved?
There's a differentiation between a slow no-wake area, which is officially recorded as a certain zone, or excuse me, a slow no-wake zone, and then the 100-foot no-wake. And the 100-foot no-wake is the request of the individual property owner that doesn't want their dockage or any of, you know, property affected by wakes.
Are you saying it doesn't really have any enforcement capabilities?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
You're just saying it's kind of a request that they don't go fast.
Well,
could the boat troll give them a ticket if they were going fast in those areas?
There has to be a designated. There's two different areas. One is the actual zones that are, you know, the area that's from Cass Street Bridge up to, I believe, the north tip of Taylor Island. As far as the slow no wake zones, those are the buoyed areas around private property. One is a public area. One is the area around private property. If that makes sense.
Did that answer your question? Well,
question is, in a certain area, like if people are multiple people are getting buoys, why don't you just extend the entire zone up to there so those people don't have to go out and, you know, why would we have multiple leg races for $210? Why wouldn't you just extend it a half mile up or something?
Yeah.
So I have two other speakers, and I don't know, Carl, if you know the next date and time of the Harbor Commission meeting. Maybe there are folks here who would like.
Just met last Monday, so.
Third Monday at 4:30, and where does up in 3220? Yes, so anybody who's interested in more information, they might want to go to the next Harbor Commission meeting. I have Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question from Mr. O'Malley. We have a fee that's not on our fee schedule, which we approve each November, correct? So is your recommendation then just to wait till November to put this fee on our fee schedule so we can officially approve it?
Yes, and
okay,
allow the Harbor Commission
Mr.
to do
thank
the work
you.
That they
thank you.
Have
yes.
set out to do.
Thank you.
Yes. Supervisor Meyer.
I just was going to mention if you want this subject, you better let somebody know it's going to be on the agenda by Carl because he's involved in putting the agenda together.
Thank you. Supervisor Schrader.
But it should not be a public hearing either.
No, I just wanted to answer Supervisor Geary's question, and also, will there be two fees then?
One fee. All right. Moving along.
I'm hoping this next item will be
thank
much
you, Carl.
Faster. The state budget, of course, has been adopted. Departments are adapting to exactly what that means, particularly in personnel and finance, in dealing with the actual implementation of the WRS issues and those types of things, and verifying that. All the changes that will happen consistent with the resolutions that you've adopted will be done for, I believe it's the 17th payroll. We're verifying all those issues. So we'll end up doing quite a summary of that and our budget overview at your August 8th policy planning meeting. That'll be the primary subject of that policy planning meeting. You will not get budget recommendations. We're still working on that. That will follow the same cycle we usually do, which is the completion of the county administrator's budget and presentation will be in September, as always, and that's when we'll start you know, the detail reviews. But in August, I'll give you an overall update on the impacts of the state, what we can confirm, the processes that the departments are working on right now, because they've just submitted their budget requests. As of last week was the deadline. So now we're starting the significant internal review. And so if you have, and I'll keep repeating this several times throughout the year, if you have particular items that you want us to look into or that you want us to work on, it can be done at a board meeting. It can be done with a phone call. If you have questions, Don Bina and I know we spent a bit of time just in a hallway discussion is an example, and I think we spent a little bit more time on some of the debt issues, and we'll spend that time either with the full board or you individually. If you've got questions about the process and when we're going to end up dealing with some issue, or you have suggestions that we need to turn over this leaf or that rock or those kinds of issues in the budget, please bring it to my attention or Gary's. We'll do our best to respond to you throughout that process. Even if it's outside the agenda items that we have, we'll respond to individual board members as much as we can, because we want to make sure that the budget process is responsive to you individually and collectively as we go into next year's challenging process. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. O'Malley, for your report. Cards and correspondence are on the board at the back of the room. I'm looking at chairs. Any committee meeting to be held in recess? If not, Supervisor Burke, if you take the chair, please.
Chairperson Johnson.
Thank you. I have two appointments, Sharon Hampson to the Sustainable Lacrosse Commission and reappointment of Sharon Hampson and reappointment of Marilyn Pedretti to the Sustainable Lacrosse Commission.
Is there a second to those reappointments? Supervisor Brockmiller, any discussion? All those in, Jeff?
Every month we reappoint people, appoint people. Where are these listed that the cycle of when people are appointed and reappointed to the different positions?
I would imagine that would be in the ordinances, but Supervisor Doyle?
Margaret has a book upstairs, so if you're, and she's got all of the committees listed, so if you're interested in knowing when there's any vacancies, just talk to her. She's got it. It's a thick binder.
It's also in the yellow book that Supervisor Paff is holding up.
Yes. Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you. I think it'd be important for, if there is a vacancy, to have an email sent out to everyone instead of us going there to say, look through the book, see if there's a vacancy. Let's just get an email to say there are vacancies and here they are.
Good suggestion.
Thank you.
Any other comments? All those in favor of the appointment signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. The motion is carried.
Item 7.5, the consent agenda. Motion by Supervisor Plesha, seconded by Supervisor Sobranek to approve the consent agenda. Is there discussion? Supervisor Feehan.
I would just ask that I be listed as excused from the last meeting. I did call and leave a message with Margaret. Spent some time in the with the doctor that day, so I was absent due to illness.
From the regular county board meeting? Is that the one you're referencing? The June 6th. That will be noted. Any other additions or corrections? Discussion on the consent agenda? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Consent agenda is approved. Supervisor Meyer, Planning Resources and Development.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank two members of the county board. The PRD committee was a little short last month, and Vicki Burke and Chuck Spiker agreed to fill in, and so we'd have plenty there for both for our issues, because there were a lot of lots of discussion that night. Vicki, I'm sure, learned a lot more about signs than she ever wanted to know, and Chuck Spiker certainly learned a lot about cell towers that he didn't know before. So I thank you again for coming. The other point I was going to make is in the report tonight, you're going to find a lot of conditions on these conditional use permits, and that's because they're asking for something a little different, and Jeff and his department come up with conditions that they think will fit well with the neighborhood and keep everyone happy. So item 7-6, zoning petition 1872 to amend La Crosse County zoning ordinance filed by Mike Peterson, acting on behalf and word of Life of Ministries Incorporated, 2015 Warren Avenue, La Crosse, Wisconsin, to rezone exclusive agriculture district commercial district B to agriculture district A in the town of Barrie. This particular request was voted on unanimously for approval, and there were three conditions. I move for your approval.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Supervisor Manti. Is there discussion? Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to hear from our zoning director, Mr. Jeff Bleschke, on this particular parcel. I have a few questions as well, but I'd like to have, like for him to give me some information first. Thank you.
Do you have a specific question, or you want him to?
Yes, Jeff, I know we've talked this week on this parcel, and I had a lot of questions. I guess if you could give me your 10 cents
30
worth,
second.
Whatever.
Okay.
And then I have a follow-up couple of questions.
The quick question on this sounds like this parcel started out as in the commercial district B back in 1978 when Dr. Sheely had the Pain Center out there. After the Dr. Sheely moved, the church ended up purchasing this property for a retreat, and the assessor ended up marking the property as being tax exempt, and I think that's the question from the supervisor. Currently, the County of La Crosse does not have a policy like the City of La Crosse does. They've got a policy in place called PILOT, Payment in Lieu of Paying Taxes. When the property goes exempt, no taxes are paid. No money goes anywhere. So one of the questions that might follow up in the zoning code is, should we put a condition on the property that if they are marked exempt by the local assessor, should they pay a local fee? And I know it works real well in the City of La Crosse because the assessor works with planning. It's one unit of government. We're dealing with two units of government here, the county and each one of the 18 or the 12 municipalities. So it's something that we can all think about when we're rewriting the zoning code.
My biggest question and problem with this is, and I know I talked with you, Jeff, on this, is mm-hmm. the town of Barrie assessor, you had said, had not looked at this property in how many years?
Four.
4 years. Mm-hmm. Now, there's definitely something wrong here. Mm-hmm. Should we have been getting taxes on this property? And how much of this property has been used as a retreat? I looked on the website when I Googled this property, and it's for sale for $350,000. Got 6.5 bedrooms. It's got 6.5 bathrooms, 9 mm-hmm. or 10 bedrooms. And it's listed, can also be used as a bed and breakfast. Now, we're evidently listening to Mike Peterson from Coldwell Banker, and he's coming, I believe, before the PRD, saying that it's going to be used as a single-family residential agricultural district A, 7 acres. Now, I also had pictures that I got off the website of this property. There's a house, as I stated, but then there's all kinds of barns and different types of buildings there. Should this whole property be tax exempt? I think that's what the PRD committee should have asked that question. I don't see that in here, and I didn't see it in any of the minutes, and I guess I'd like to hear from them or get this referred back, because I think we need to change that ordinance and try to get some taxable property off of 7 acres.
Mm-hmm. The story behind this is the petitioners brought in a different legal description than the original, and you'd have to take a look at the map on that, supervisors, to see. There was a shaded area, if I can remember, that was Commercial District B. That was the original Dr. Shealy Pain Center. They wanted to reshape the thing for whatever reason in order to come up with, I believe it was 7.07 acres. I'm just kind of going by memory here. But
that's right.
The parcel, when you're out there, it's real long and narrow, and not in defense of anybody, but kind of the boulevard as you're pulling up is kind of a privacy issue because there are some homes in that area. Then you come to an old tennis court. The driveway on this is along the south line of the property, and then you end up coming to the center itself, which is a series of about 4 different additions. It looks like a log home, but it's got 4 different additions on the original home. There's actually 15 bedrooms. It was used as a church retreat at the time, and it was added on a couple times by the church. As you go through the parking lot, there's kind of a turnaround there, and there's a pretty good-sized pole building that has some mechanical features listed in the thing. I'm not really sure if that's really needed by the retreat, but they do store some things back there. And then it does go on for about another 100 feet behind the pole building. Is all that needed? That's what they asked for, and it wasn't questioned. So.
May I continue,
sure.
Madam Chair? And in checking this out, it's listed as Prairie Ministries, I believe, and I'm not sure why Word of Life Ministries is on here. And I even called the number of the owner. It was Pastor Larry Lotz's wife that I spoke with, and she still stated that the property was still for sale. Now, is this going to be Word of Life, or is it going to be Prairie Ministries? And maybe somebody from the PRD could answer that. But I really think we need to take a look at what we're really doing here. Do we really want to get some taxable base? And this is an opportunity to do this. I have no problem with a residential home if that is to be tax exempt, but why should it be tax exempt? I guess it's totally wrong. And if it's not sold yet, and it hasn't been sold, because she even stated it's not sold yet, I think we need to probably refer this for 30 days.
So, Supervisor Richmond, I'm going to. You asked 2 questions. You wanted information from PR&D, and then, if not, the issue of referral would come back. So let's give the folks on PR&D an opportunity to give some input here. But first, Supervisor Schrader, did you have another set of questions, or was it along these same lines?
It was along the same lines, okay. Yes.
So then, Supervisor Pedretti.
Mr. Blaski, can you tell us, in zoning, do we deal with tax-exempt?
No, we don't.
No. In my work with the Town of Holland, it's the assessor's job to determine whether it's tax-exempt or not.
That's correct.
Right now, it's owned by Word of Life Ministries. They have applied for tax-exempt. They have to continue to apply for tax-exempt. If this is sold as a single-family house, it would revert back to tax. That has nothing to do with zoning.
That's right. As of January 1st every year, that determination is made.
Supervisor Meyer?
Marilyn asked someone what I was going to ask, but Bill, could we, if we do send it back for 30 days, can we change the rules in the middle of an application like this?
You're asking what, Mr. Shepard?
Yes. I mean, it seems like they started out under one rule. Now we're going to say, well, we want to change this.
What?
Change the ordinance.
I'm a little, what rule are we talking about? I think
common sense rule.
I think I think Ms. Pedretti is correct. The tax exempt issue is not an issue for zoning, if that's what you're asking.
That's partly what I was asking, but regardless if that's the issue or not, if we go back, we may change something. They've applied under one rule, and we want to go back and change the ordinance. I don't see how we could do that.
You can't change the ordinance with respect to this application.
Good. That's what I wanted to hear. Thank you.
Supervisor Bina.
Okay, a couple of points. They are putting this new plot together so that they can sell it. Nobody knows who is going to buy it. It may go to a private outfit that wants to tear all the buildings down and put a house up there. There's a lot of things it could do. If it goes back to a ministry or a religious or any other entity that is tax exempt, then and there the tax assessor will determine whether it's tax exempt or not.
That's correct.
I went through a whole long deal in the town of Washington with Norskadalen. They wanted their whole 450-acre farm to be tax exempt. We argued. I didn't win a popularity contest with them. We finally determined after many, many months that the local assessor had the jurisdiction over it. He came down from Buffalo County. He went out there. The building that they have their business in, they have parties in, and they have fundraising in, can't be tax exempt. The barns that are old are antique. They were tax exempt. And the land around the buildings, the rest of the farm was, they have to pay taxes on. So the tax assessor, once this is rezoned, and if they sell it, the tax assessor will determine the tax legal status. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go back to Supervisor Richmond. You just heard from the PR&D committee. I'm going back to
sure.
you.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Pleasure is.
Okay. With that, it does state in here single-family residential use and or prayer retreat center. Being there's a N-3039 and they're in an N-3041. If that is the case, we can't change this application, then, and the ordinance will come maybe to follow in a few months, but then we should be deleting the parcel. It's in there, number three, the parcel can continue to be used as a retreat center. Do we know that has been used as a retreat center? Had we heard that, maybe?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. The reason that the committee put those three conditions on there is because if we take a look at our zoning ordinance, chapter 17.33, which are the items that can be allowed on this property once it becomes Ag A, there's a long list of things. But along with the residential use under section 17.30, and churches are allowed, but there's also a long list of other things that can happen in section 17.30. If this passes the county board this evening, they have to record a deed restriction. If you read right underneath the three conditions, if this petition is approved as conditional zoning, deed restrictions must be recorded before the zoning takes place. They can only do these two things. They can only have a retreat, and they can only have a single family residence. They can't have a boarding house or a bed and breakfast, anything that they think that they're going to end up getting out of this. A bed and breakfast would require a conditional use permit.
Okay.
So
but
it would come back.
But it does say and or.
One or the other.
And or one.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to amend this to delete number three. The parcel can continue to be used as a retreat center. If we're talking about a residential single-family property, continued single-family residential property.
Yeah, you can amend it.
So that's a motion by you, Supervisor Richmond?
I'd like to amend it to delete number three, being it hasn't been used as a retreat for 10 years. The town assessor hasn't even been there in the last four.
Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Schrader. The amendment before us, and our debate now will be on the amendment, is whether or not to delete condition number 3. On the amendment, I got you, but I'm coming back. I got to come back. Supervisor Weers.
Okay, I don't know. Thank you. I didn't know if I heard that wrong, but I think it is currently being used as a retreat center. It has been before the last 10 years. I mean, recently. I don't think it's been used as a single-family residence, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Supervisor Pedretti, on the amendment.
On the amendment. The idea is to allow a retreat center, if a retreat center wanted to buy it from the present retreat center, so it can stay in the use it already exists. This rezone is to help set it up to actually keep going as it is, but also give the opportunity for somebody to buy it as a single residence. Mm-hmm. And I think Mr. Blesky stated it well. It doesn't allow for anything else. If they want something else like a bed and breakfast, they have to come back for another conditional use, and they have to go through this process so the neighbors are aware of what's going to happen. It's not changing what it is right now. So I think you need to leave it that for the sale of it and for the fact that that's what they came in for. If we take out number 3, that's not what they came in for. Thank you.
Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'd like to hear from the supervisor whose area it is and get their opinion.
And that would be Supervisor Kyle.
Leave the number 3 and 2 for the present time.
Any other discussion on the amendment? We're ready to vote on the amendment. Supervisor Cotter, can you log back in again so you can vote, please? So on the amendment to delete condition number 3, let's try this on voice vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Can you raise your hands, please? Sorry. Although, so we have Supervisor Bills Kemper. Pardon? The amendment is to delete number 3. Supervisor Bills Kemper, Supervisor Richmond, Supervisor Sobranek, and Supervisor Schrader, and Supervisor Geary. All those opposed?
Aye.
The remaining supervisors vote no. The amendment fails. We are back to the original motion or the original committee report. Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our vote here is on zoning only, correct? Not tax assessment. And I don't think that any talk of tax assessment is germane to the issue, and it should not be heard here. So let's just vote on the zoning and let that other issue be dealt with in the proper arena.
Supervisor Pedretti.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I think we're confusing the issue of zoning and classification. You're not taxed on how you are zoned. You are taxed on how you use it. Everybody is. There are people who live in commercial districts. They are not taxed commercial if they are living there. They're taxed residential. Oh, yeah. This is not an issue for zoning, and it shouldn't be an issue. Thank you.
Supervisor Meyer.
Just as a matter of interest or point of order, Bill Shepard, had this amendment passed, what would have happened to this then? Would this go back to our committee or what?
Yes, we'd have to go back to the committee and to the town.
Okay, but we didn't. I'm just wondering what really would have happened. Thank you, Bill.
So we are back on the original committee report. Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Jeff. What would be the advantage of them changing the designation from commercial district B to Ag A on this?
The commercial use, it's really not a commercial use anymore. When they decided they wanted to list this, it was our suggestion to take it out of the commercial district because too many things could happen. There are no deed restrictions on that commercial parcel right now, and that is really not a spot for any additional type of commercial business out there. So they did this based on our advice to take it to Ag A because Ag A, under the residential district portion, because everything that's listed under residential A can happen under Ag A, and churches, parochial schools, things like that can happen, and that's what this is in the agricultural A district. So by limiting them to just the residence and the retreat center, that leaves out duplexes, fourplexes, everything else that this thing really could be turned into. You're welcome.
Are we ready for the vote?
Yes.
On the committee report to approve, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, Supervisor Richmond. Back to you, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you. Item 7-7, Jeff, stay around. This is the dogs.
Yeah.
conditional use permit Literally. Number 834 filed by Donald and Sherry Durham to operate a commercial animal establishment on 3.01 acres of land zoned exclusive agriculture district in the town of Hamilton. The committee voted to deny this request. I move for your support of denial.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to deny, seconded by Supervisor Schrader. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That committee report is approved. Back to you.
Item 7-8, conditional use permit number 835 filed by Lauren D. Dresser and Laurie Maney to operate an automobile, cycle, and recreational vehicle repair business on 3.04 acres in the land zone agriculture district A in the town of Burns. This passed unanimously with 13 conditions. I move your approval.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, which is to approve with 13 conditions, seconded by Supervisor Kyle. Discussion. Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Jeff. I wonder if you can explain to me the residential versus environmental deal here. It's a wetland area. You talk about intense use of hazardous materials. Is this actually allowed in the zoning or not?
Yes, it is. This is actually a conditional use permit. If you take a look at the drawing on the back side and run a line behind the house, parallel with the back of the house, everything to the south and west of that is some water. It's wetland. It's the backup of the La Crosse River. Everything else above that line would be the residential portion of the lot. About 2 months ago, this fellow came in and made an application for the same thing after discovering that the committee was very, very close to denying his request because he had some oil barrels out on the side of his garage in that hashed area next to that 30 by 50 foot detached building. And he was already working on the site. So when we pointed this stuff out, that there are regulations, you have to have oil, used oil in a used oil barrel. You just can't have it in milk jugs sitting out on the side of the garage. He cleaned this place up fantastically. So he understands we mean business, and there is nothing allowed to be stored outside. So we covered that in all the condition number 6, all liquid waste, and it has to be stored inside. No waste oils or vehicles are allowed to be drained on the property. If we go out there that's part of Chad's job. If we see any oil on the ground, he could be in for termination, plus cleaning it up.
Okay, so he does understand, and he did respond.
Yes, he does.
Okay, because you know, you have wetlands and you have oil. They don't.
They don't. Absolutely
okay,
not.
Thank you, mm-hmm.
Supervisor Wood.
Thank you. I'm noticing the mobile home park here in close proximity. I at one time lived across from a Kmart auto repair, and I'll tell you, 7:30 on Saturday morning, that was my alarm clock. Were there no people that came to speak in opposition of noise, motors revving up, like, okay, how fast can it go, and
no.
Things trying out?
No. That's kind of remarkable in itself for a business like this, because The first time the committee went out there, there was a big snowplow truck sitting in that shaded area, and there's a little 24 by 24 foot detached garage right in front of the house that had a lean-to on it. And when the Board of Adjustment gave him the permission to construct this building, he was supposed to tear part of that shed off, and he hadn't done any of this. So I don't think he took us very seriously. He had just been laid off from a job. He has no income. He got started because he, ahead of time, it was an after the fact. He paid his after the fact fee, and he completely understands, but you're right. Nobody from the any adjacent property ended up showing up and complaining about this. He said there's a need for it. We also questioned him during the public hearing. Had he contacted commercial businesses in the village of Rockland or Bangor to see if they would incubate him in a place like that? He said he doesn't have a nickel to start anywhere except his home. So,
Supervisor Wood, did that answer your question?
Okay. Yes, and I sympathize with that. On the other hand, you know, if there are residences, you're not really aware of the issue until it's there happening to you. So I guess I would like to make sure that we're open to complaints if there gets to be a noise issue.
And that's for sure. If you look at number five, we limited him to four vehicles on the property at a time, because we have had complaints where people drop these things off and they don't even leave a name or what they wanted to have done on the vehicle, and then they end up with six. He knows he's got to have four, so that's it.
Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jeff, I noticed under number 10 it said the town assessor shall be notified of all equipment for personal property taxes. Shouldn't we have that in our zoning ordinance for all this? Because it seems like after being on the committee, they miss a lot of stuff. Shouldn't we just include it for everybody?
And again, this is something that Chad is going to be taken care of, because the town has to have a personal property account for something like this. And if they don't end up on the rolls, we can have them in for termination again.
Mm-hmm. Supervisor Billings.
I'm wondering how soon do you expect Chad to be out to inspect this after it starts?
Mr. Malley's committee just approved the replacement of a person in my office, so Chad had not been able to fulfill his enforcement portions, and when we end up filling that, he will be getting out on all these conditional use permits.
So what's your best estimate on when he'll be able to get out there?
Probably within a year. I mean, the committee drives past these places, you know, very routinely. So, you know, they don't have blinders on, believe me. You know, I want them to, but you better check that out, you know. So
I've been on that zoning tour, and
on the radar.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if some of these, I mean, this seems to be kind of a vulnerable one. That was stated by Supervisor Hampson with the wetlands. Do you prioritize some of these, or does he just go by most, you know, furthest from?
No. We've probably gotten through half of them, the ones that are on the books already. So the second half are going to be ones that are covered. Because some of the things that we end up covering is there can only be one employee. He knows he's got to come back in if he's getting that successful and ask for another employee or two more vehicles in order to store out there. He knows this stuff. But if we see something like that, we're going to pull in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank
because
you.
Because we were so hot on this one to start out with. It wasn't our top pick either, but yeah.
Supervisor Meyer.
Well, the other thing is we're going to be watching him quite close, because he's going to change that driveway. So we'll be there. The highway department will know what's happening. And
correct.
When he straightens that out. So we'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not Chad, but somebody will.
Mm-hmm.
So what is before us is the committee report, which is to approve with the 13 conditions. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved. Mr. Meyer?
Item 7-9, conditional use permit number 836, filed by Amanda and Jeremy Christensen, to expand in-home child care center
to a group daycare license up for 20 children on land zoned Agriculture District A in the town of Farmington. This was voted on and approved unanimously with the 10 conditions defined in your on your blue page. I move for your approval.
Mr. Mayor moves the committee report, seconded by Supervisor Paff. Discussion? Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am concerned about condition number 8. It looks like there is an enormous amount of junk and salvage along the shared property line, which creates a highly unsafe situation for children, not only from junk and salvage, but also from varmints. This sounds like a disaster in the making. Now, it says every effort should be made to talk with this neighbor to clean that area up. Do we have any kind of pressure to bring to bear on this neighbor to actually do this?
I believe that Amanda Christensen knows this person. It may be a relative. Because all the parcels, if you look at the map, surrounding this parcel were created as either parents or children of the farm owner. So L. Hansen, I think, is the father of W. and D. Hansen. And when he created his little parcel there along that easement, it was part of the farm. There's a lot of farm implement, tires, those kinds of things, just piles of steel. And she said, I think it's in the minutes, that he's been in the progress of taking truckloads out there, but he does it himself. So there is an urgency now that there's going to be additional children there. And when we were out on the tour, there was some play stuff out in the driveway, which indicates that area is used for the kids. So that's why we put that condition on there, so it does get cleaned up. They can't have junk and salvage anyway. But when we went out on the tour, it really, we get to see that, so that's why we react to it then.
His microphone's on. Is that it for you, Supervisor Cruz? Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you. That was one of my questions. The other is the septic system. Has the health department gone out and looked at that yet?
Yes, we actually have a statement from the county health department indicating that they have been out there. Usually what the health department does is they have the property owner file an affidavit so it's on record, so if anybody else purchases the property afterwards, they know that the septic system has been used. They're not going to do that in this case. We have a letter on file, so that condition has already been satisfied that they're going to monitor it.
Okay, and then on the junk, I don't feel comfortable voting for this mm-hmm. until the junk is gone.
So you'll be voting no then?
Well, I will okay. unless someone can assure me that it's well on the way towards being cleared out.
Okay, I can pass that along to her that this is a condition, and I've had this conversation with our corporation counsel that the conditional use permit does not go in effect until all the conditions are met.
Okay.
This isn't something that they're working on.
So it won't be.
Right. And you'll notice that she's got to make some modifications. This permit will not become effective until all licensing and construction activities are completely in place. That's number 3. She's got to cut a hole in her basement wall and put an egress door and some windows in there. And so
okay, that's fine.
She will
Thank you.
Know. Yes.
Supervisor Weirs.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out when we talked to her about this, she has to get inspected by the state licensing, and she has to get, I think, more inspections now that she's increasing the number of children. So that's also another monitoring body that will make sure that the kids are okay. And if you go out there, we saw that she's got a fence around her property. So it was a problem, but it's not like you're thinking it's just right there in her yard. There's a fence around her yard where the kids are that they wouldn't really be over by this junk, but it will be nice to have it cleaned up just for extra safety.
Supervisor Friedland.
Thank you. I don't understand what the condition is on number 7. It says the parking space appears to be adequate for the owner's garage access and child drop-off, but appears to be in conflict with child usage as well. So What's the condition? What are they supposed to do?
The if you look at number 10, the list of these conditions shall be shared with the state and county licensing authority. We pointed that out because there's a two-car garage just south of the house. And like I said, when we pulled up, there was little Hot Wheels out there and a buggy or something. And if this is the area where parents drop off their kids and pick them up, stuff like that shouldn't be out there. That indicates to me right away that there's a child out here somewhere, you know. But the children are all supervised. These are younger children. These aren't kids that are in school. So this may have been her children's toys that were sitting out there. We pointed that out to her, that during these hours of pickup or if somebody's got to come in and get picked up because their child is sick, there shouldn't be any toys out there. That would look like there's a conflict with the use. So that's all that was meant to portray.
So you mean to be telling her then that she cannot have a conflict with child usage?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And she's picking up one more employee at this time that who is licensed too. So we tell these people you have to have these conditions posted somewhere. So anybody that's working at your facility knows this. It's just not the owner.
Supervisor Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Blusky, just in terms of sequence of asking and complying, do we get the permit from the county first, then you do the restoration and the safety issues, and then they apply for the state licensing? Or did this come before us too soon? Were they ready to come for this?
She didn't want to invest in the reconstruction of her basement and the other facilities. That she's got to have another kitchen, and you know, when you add these other children. And she didn't want to invest this and then be turned down. Okay. This allows her to start that process because under current zoning, you can have up to 8 and not have any license or zoning. So as soon as you go, you have the 9th child there, all this stuff comes into place, and she has to ask for a conditional use permit. Now it's a commercial activity in a residential area.
Okay. Thank you. And yes. And I applaud her for her endeavor, but I just wanted to make sure that the sequence is the proper sequence, that we're not jumping the gun.
Yes, okay. It was.
Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you. And I am still concerned about number 8. So I'm wondering, can we take that sentence, that last sentence, every effort should be made out of there, and can we change it to this must be cleaned up before?
Certainly.
Can we do that? Mm-hmm. Does that require an amendment on my part?
Yes, it does.
Okay, then I would like to move that we remove that last sentence and say something more definitive like, this must be cleaned up before and a permit can be issued.
So Supervisor Cruz has is proposing an amendment. Is there a second? And then I'll restate it. Seconded by Supervisor Hampson. That will you restate it, please?
Okay. Get rid of the last sentence and say, this must be cleaned up before a permit is issued.
Everybody clear on the amendment? So it's deletion of the last sentence and that it must be done before the permit is issued. So we're on the amendment. Supervisor Weers.
First of all, I have a problem with that. I guess, number one, does this have to go back to committee if this is amended?
So, Mr. Shepherd, did you say yes, it does?
Yes.
So that stalls her starting her business even more, and this isn't an issue with her property. This is her neighbor's. So we should be voting on what she's doing and her requests, not on her neighbor's, and we should enforce that they clean their junk up because they can't have junk there, and we shouldn't be taking that out on her when she hasn't had a problem. And her business plan, and if you would have been at the meeting, you would have seen she's very responsible, and you can just tell that she's got her plan laid out well. Her property's clean, it's nice, it's set up well for kids. So I would just encourage us not to refer this.
So on the Cruz amendment, Mr. Supervisor Meyer.
Thank you, Chairman. I was going to ask a very similar question to what Tina did, but Jeff
Is there going to be something issued against the guy with the junk separately?
We
other than having her say, please clean this up?
We have not started any enforcement action because he's in the process of cleaning it up.
You think it's worthwhile to put the pressure on?
We can.
I'm just asking. I don't know if that's the way to go or not. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Supervisor Doyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with what Supervisor Weers has to say. I think that we're targeting the wrong person. I 100% agree with Ms. Cruz in terms of her goal here, but I don't think it's fair, and I'm not sure it's even legal to say somebody else must do something before we will give you your permit.
Yeah,
so I'm very uncomfortable with taking that approach.
Supervisor Bina on the amendment.
I agree with Supervisor Doyle and Tina Weers because this isn't her property where the, if, and I wasn't out there and I haven't seen it, but if it is her relative's outfit, land, and he is quitting
and
farming
he,
or something, we can't tell him exactly what he can do. But if it's her family, we could probably put some pressure on him. But
any new items for debate on the Cruz Amendment?
No, not tonight.
Okay. On the Cruz Amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed? Same sign.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
The amendment fails with no votes. We're having many firsts here tonight. Back to the original committee report. All those in favor of the committee report signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Oh. That is passed. It was unanimous. Passed. She's confused. Back to you, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you. Moving right along, 7-10, conditional use permit number 837, filed by David and Julie Harder to store trucks inside a building to perform maintenance on the trucks and equipment and salt storage as part of the Harder Trucking on 0.50 acres on land zoned traditional agriculture district in the town of Unalaska. This was voted on and passed unanimously. There are 13 conditions on this one, so I move for your approval and hope you can lower the conditions.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, seconded by Supervisor Burke. Is there discussion on this item? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. It is approved unanimously. Back to you, Mr. Meyer.
Item 7-11, conditional use permit number 838, filed by David and Julie Harder to store trucks inside along with the storage for lime screening as part of the Cooley concrete repair on 0.50 acres in land zone transitional agriculture district in the town of Unalaska. This also was approved unanimously with 12 conditions. I move for your approval.
Mr. Meyer moves the committee report, seconded by Supervisor Doyle. Is there discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is carried unanimously.
I have one comment. We talked a lot about tours tonight, and anyone that wants to go on a tour, call Jeff or myself or someone, and if we have room, we'll just put somebody in with us, and you can get firsthand information on most of these. Plus, you're guaranteed to stop at Linda's.
Yeah.
Now we'll move on to PRD's reader, Marilyn Pedretti, on items 7-12 and 7-13.
Supervisor Pedretti.
7-12, to the honorable members of La Crosse County Board of Supervisors. Whereas the striped school located on Highway 162 in the town of Burns, La Crosse County, was nominated for county designation as a historic site because it is an excellent example of a one-room schoolhouse in continuous operation from 1859 until 1963. And whereas the house contains an extensive record of school documentation, which provides valuable insight into the evolution of education and society in southwest Wisconsin, and the building has been preserved in its original state. And whereas the school's name is derived from the horizontal painting of the boards, white and red, which created a striped effect. And the school is one of the oldest surviving rural one-room schoolhouses in La Crosse County. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby approve adding the Striped School as a historic site to the La Crosse County Historic Sites listing. Further, be it resolved that the designation of the Striped School as a La Crosse County Historic Site shall subject the site to all provisions of Chapter 22 of the General Code of La Crosse County, and this resolution shall be recorded at the county expense in the La Crosse County Register of Deeds office. Fiscal note, the cost of recording the resolution is $30. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Pedretti, seconded by Supervisor Plesha. Is there discussion? Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wonder, do whoever owns this, are they in favor of this designation?
Supervisor Mock has an answer to that question.
Definitely. There's been a group working on this school and keeping it in repair. The next school also, you'd be amazed at how hard people are working to save these schools.
No, I
definitely
understand. The owner, is the owner in favor?
Yeah,
not a
yes,
group.
Yes.
Thank you. And is it the same on the next one?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved unanimously. Back to you.
Item 7-13, honorable members of La Crosse County Board of Supervisors. Whereas the Middle Ridge Little School, located on State Highway 33 in the town of Washington, La Crosse County, was nominated for county designation as a historic site because it is an excellent example of a one-room county school that served students at the turn of the 20th century. And whereas the school's history is unique and interesting because it was the site of a public parochial school partnership where Roman Catholic nuns served exclusively as teachers in the public school from 1908 until 1965. And whereas the original 1890 building is preserved intact and the owner, Ridge History Park Incorporated, is committed to preserving the school in its present condition. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby approve adding the Middle Ridge Little School as a historic site to the La Crosse County Historic Sites listing. Further, be it resolved that the designation of the Middle Ridge Little School as a La Crosse County Historic Site shall subject the site to all provisions of Chapter 22 of the General Code of La Crosse County, and this resolution shall be recorded at county expense in the La Crosse County Register of Deeds office. Fiscal note, the cost of recording this resolution is also $30. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Pedretti, seconded by Supervisor Wood. Discussion. Supervisor Bina.
This is a schoolhouse that was moved from Middle Ridge to a farm, used as a farm building for a number of years, and now it's moved over to a selected site. There's a board of directors raising money for this. They fixed it all up. It is in real good shape now. They want to add a building to it later, but they are taking care of it because the people who are on the board were the ones that graduated from that school years ago.
Any other discussion? Supervisor Mock.
I just wanted to say that today's paper has a great article about the little school at Middle Ridge, and it also is having their annual, on Sunday, the little school will have their annual Ridge Fest at the Ridge History Park, and you're all invited.
And if you want further information about it, you can talk to Supervisor Mock after the meeting.
12 to 4 on Sunday.
Any other discussion on the resolution? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. That is carried unanimously. Is that it for you, Mr. Meyer?
That is it.
Thank you. Executive Committee report. Supervisor Burke.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. You had indicated to me that Supervisor Billings was going to take it. Regarding to honorable members of La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding the acknowledgement of the best of public service. Whereas the following employees have been a faithful part in providing the best of public service to La Crosse County: Carol A. Russell, Lakeview Health Center, 17 plus years. Patricia M. Vinson, Hillview Health Care Centers, 20 plus years. David A. Logging, Highway Department, 32 plus years. Larry J. Robinson, Sheriff Department, 39 years. Karen J. Sackett, Human Services Economic Support, 34 years plus. Whereas it is the wish of the County Board of Supervisors to acknowledge long and faithful service on behalf of the citizens of La Crosse County, now therefore be it resolved that a resolution extending our congratulations be recorded in La Crosse County Board proceedings and a certificate of our actions be presented as an expression of our gratitude. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Wood. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That is carried unanimously.
Resolution 7-5. To the honorable members of La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, approval of Phase 2 sale of vacant lots in Meadow Park Estates. Whereas on June 4th, 2010, a judgment was entered in La Crosse County Circuit Court vesting La Crosse County with an estate in fee simple, absolute, and 55 vacant lots in Meadow Park Estates located in the village of Rockland as a result of an action for foreclosure of tax liens by proceeding in rem pursuant to Wisconsin Statutes Section 75.521. And whereas La Crosse County published notice of the sale of 11 lots in Meadow Park Estates hereinafter referred to as Phase 1, Exhibit A, and the County Board authorized the sale on July 15, 2010 at the price per lot to be no less than the appraised value. And whereas La Crosse County has received real estate appraisals on the remaining 44 lots in Meadow Park Estates hereinafter referred to as Phase 2, Exhibit B, from a qualified real estate appraiser, and the lots have a market value as of June 2011 that range from $17,000 to $18,000. And whereas La Crosse County has published a Class 3 notice in the La Crosse Tribune offering the lots in Phase 2 for sale by bid as required by Wisconsin Statute Section 75.69. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the County Board Chair or the County Administrator are hereby authorized to accept the highest bid that is most advantageous to La Crosse County for each of the above-described vacant Phase 2 lots in Meadow Park Estates resulting from the notice published as a Class 3 notice in the La Crosse Tribune. But every bid on said lots less than the appraised value shall be rejected. Be it further resolved that the County Board Chair or the County Administrator are hereby authorized to accept any and all offers to purchase the lots in either Phase 1 or Phase 2 that remain unsold after the bids are closed, provided that an offer to purchase on any lot for less than the appraised value of the lot shall be rejected. Be it further resolved that the county will offer a commission of up to 5% to any realtor who successfully negotiates a sale of lots in either Phase 1 or 2 that remain unsold after bids are closed. Be it further resolved that the County Board Chair and County Clerk are hereby authorized to sign the necessary deeds to transfer title to qualified buyers of the lots pursuant to the directions of this resolution. Fiscal note, the revenue from the sale of tax delinquent property is first used to satisfy outstanding unpaid tax liens. The average amount of unpaid liens owed on each lot is as follows. The Cross County will also incur $200 for the title work on the sale of each and possible realtor's commission at 5% if the lots are listed for sale with a real estate broker. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Billings. Discussion. Supervisor Ebert.
I just noticed up to 5%. Is there an opportunity to get less, or do you put it out on bids? And I guess the follow-up would be, how is the broker selected once you close the documents?
Charlie Handy is here. He can answer those questions. First one was up to 5%.
The broker is selected by the buyer. So if the buyer contacts the broker first and then the broker contacts us, they sign a contract with the buyer. That contract indicates the percentage up to 5%.
And so, in other words, we don't actually offer this. We don't enlist a broker to sell our lots. It's only that a broker or a buyer uses a broker as an intermediary. So we're not hiring someone.
We're doing our own marketing, but we're not real estate brokers. So the marketing that we're doing is in-house, but the brokerage is coming through the purchaser.
Thank you much.
Any other discussion? Supervisor Gamroth.
I had a question today from a constituent that's wants to purchase a lot. I don't quite understand what you're saying. She said they put in a bid. How is this going to work for them?
There won't be a commission there because they're directly dealing with us, so there's no broker involved. So, yeah, they can contact us. If somebody's interested in buying out there, they can contact us directly, or they can contact a real estate broker of their choosing, and that broker would then be the person working the deal.
Have you had someone contact you?
Yes.
Okay, then that must have been who would call. And if anybody wants to drive out there, it is beautiful. It is beautiful out there. I drove around, and the lots, they're undeveloped, but it's beautiful. It really is.
I'm just going to ask that Charlie mentioned that there was a ribbon cutting for phase two and maybe just mention.
Sure. Tuesday, we had a grand opening kind of ribbon cutting ceremony for phase two in one of the existing homes that was built last year by the Cooley Cap and Cooley Housing Development Corporation. Beautiful house. They built four last year. They've sold three. So that 75% sale rate at this point is better than most. We're doing real well out there as far as the project goes. We have sold at this point four, and we have offers or bids and potential offers that are looking at us for, I think, 12 more. And on average in Rockland, they built two houses a year over the past 20 years. So in 2 years, we've done about 14.
Could I just ask you a question? How long will it take before they will know? They're really anxious to know if it's going to go through.
We're actually pushing very hard for a closing date for those landowners, but it takes a process, as everybody knows, on real estate for a closing date. But they will know tonight, after this resolution passed, that the deal is ready to go. It's just a matter of finding that closing date.
Thank you.
Is that it for you? There was another hand back over here. Sorry, I didn't see. Supervisor Schrader.
Charlie, are there covenants out there as far as garages and so on and so forth?
There are covenants. I don't have them memorized, Jeff. I apologize. But it does require minimum square footage on the house, minimum landscape requirements, and minimum garage.
I was just wondering because a lot of cases, Cooley Cap doesn't erect garages.
The buildings that Cooley Cap is doing out there, there's a very specific RFP that they went through the process for bidding for the construction of the homes, and we were involved in the architectural control of that bidding process. So if you look at those houses out there, they're excellent. They're done well. We're real happy with the construction, the quality, and the design.
Any other discussion? Supervisor Billings.
I would just like to second that. I was able to go to the ribbon cutting, and what Supervisor Gamera said is true. It's nice area, and the house was beautiful. It was a very nicely constructed house. I would be happy to live there.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That resolution is passed. Back to you, Supervisor Burke.
Item number 7-17, I'm sorry, 7-16, to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding acceptance of Clifton Gunderson's audit report on La Crosse County's 2010 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Whereas the audit firm of Clifton Gunderson and Company has recently completed their audit of the financial statements of La Crosse County for the year ended December 31st, 2010, and whereas the financial audit and management letter will be presented to the La Crosse County Board at their regular county board meeting on July 21st, 2011, now therefore be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board hereby accepts the financial audit and management letter as presented for the 2010 fiscal year. Fiscal note, Clifton Gunderson's fee for 2010 audit services is $67,000, for which money is budgeted in 2011 and allocated across several departments. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Cruz. Discussion on this. Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gary, how often do we change auditors? And if we do, how are the, is it a bid or an FRP or what?
We issue an RFP approximately every 4 to 5 years. We issued the most recent one a year ago, and it was for the contract is for 5 years.
Thank you much, sir.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved unanimously. Supervisor Burke.
Item 7-17 to honorable members of La Crosse County Board of Supervisors authorizing the county treasurer, county administrator, and county finance director to enter into an institutional agency agreement with Marshall and Isley Trust Company, known as for NA for investment of county funds. Whereas La Crosse County has reviewed various alternatives for investing county funds consistent with the requirements of Chapter 4.06 of the County Code and Wisconsin Statutes 59.25, 59.62, and where Marshall and Isley Trust Company, NA, provides comprehensive services with reasonable fees and has an established record of good returns. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the County Treasurer, County Administrator, and County Finance Director are hereby authorized to enter into an investment agency agreement between La Crosse County and Marshall and Isley Trust Company, NA, and are further authorized to, from time to time, identify those employees of La Crosse County who are authorized to give directions and otherwise transact business with Marshall and Isley Trust Company, NA. Be it further resolved that the county treasurer is hereby authorized to sell, assign, and endorse for transfer bonds or other securities now registers or hereafter registered in the name of La Crosse County and is further authorized to give such directions that are necessary for the transfer of assets from brokerage accounts or any other deposit accounts in the name of La Crosse County to Marshall and Isley's Trust Company, N.A. Be it further resolved that the La Crosse County Board Chair is authorized to sign said institutional agency agreement after approval by Corporation Council. Fiscal note, authorization and communication agreement only. No specific fiscal impact. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Kyle. Discussion. Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was reading over the executive committee minutes, and there wasn't really much germane to this item in the minutes, so I just have a few questions for Mr. Ingvaldson. And since we haven't done this in my tenure on the county board, I guess I have a few questions. Gary, does M&I currently manage our investments?
M&I is one of our money managers, yes.
How many do we have for La Crosse County?
Well, we have about five primary ones. We have the State of Wisconsin Investment Pool, Dana Investment Advisors out of Brookfield, Wisconsin, Wells Fargo, Trust Point locally, and M&I.
Okay, thank you. And how long have they been with us, M&I?
Well, probably about 3 years or so.
Okay, so they haven't been with us that long. Okay. What would you say the criteria is for when you select, 3 years ago, when you select a financial institution to help manage our investments or handle our investments, what criteria do you use for that?
You know, the primary concern of ours is safety of principle. And also along with that, we want to know the experience of any firm as far as investing with governmental entities in the state of Wisconsin. Through the years, we've had money managers throughout the United States do cold calls on us over the phone, and frankly, we won't work with them. We want somebody that's got experience in the state of Wisconsin. We want to know the experience of the key individuals that will be managing the money. We want references of other governmental units so that we can talk to them. We will also then call those people. For example, we talked to Waukesha County. They have a larger investment staff, so to speak, and we rely on their experience. Just to give you an example as far as M&I, we had previously invested the money with J.P. Morgan Chase, and frankly, it was really one of their predecessors, Bank One, who was really a regional bank that we had originally invested with. But when they got bought by J.P. Morgan Chase, we were kind of lost in the shuffle. And so over a period of time, we interviewed others. Frankly, we met with the M&I investment team probably five times before we agreed to deposit money with them because we wanted to know what their investment style was. We wanted to know their experience and that type of thing.
Great, thank you. I appreciate your due diligence and really taking time to thoroughly analyze and investigate all these firms. What prompted this resolution then?
Okay.
Because I read in the minutes that obviously M&I Bank got purchased by a Canadian bank.
Right.
Is that what prompted this resolution?
Yes. Just as a reminder, actually every November the county treasurer process and a resolution through the county board that authorizes about 30 different banks and so forth in the state of Wisconsin, local banks that we can invest money with. So we already had the authority to invest with M&I Bank, but when they were bought by the Bank of Montreal, it was actually their new parent that requested this document.
Okay, thank you. And there's no fiscal note, but certainly these firms get compensated. Mm-hmm. How are they paid?
Generally, it's on the dollar amount of investments.
For example, so there's a commission involved?
Yes.
Okay, there's a commission. And how much have we, maybe this is not the meeting for this, but I'd like more information on how much we're paying our firms, and just like have an idea. And then I'm there's probably a line item somewhere in our budget, right, that reverse of this?
Just as an example, I mean, it runs anywhere from 20, it's called 20 basis points. In other words, so 100 basis points is 1%, probably about 20 basis points on average.
Okay, thank you. And then final question, I appreciate the board allowing me to ask these questions here. What would you recommend reexamining our list of financial consultants, like Supervisor Ebert's question earlier on the auditor? Would you recommend, I guess you're on top of it, but just to kind of, how often do you review the performance of these companies? And obviously you're reviewing these things on a quarterly basis, because we don't usually get to see this.
Right. It depends upon the firm, but it's probably every 6 months. I mean, we certainly get monthly statements that we review. They come and meet with us a minimum of twice a year. Sometimes it is quarterly.
Okay, so if there was something that happened, obviously you would report that to the board. You'd recommend, you would not be afraid to recommend a new financial institution, adding one or subtracting one?
I would not be afraid to recommend
that. Thank you.
Correct.
Any other discussion? Supervisor Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ingvaldson, is M&I using basically their internal vehicles, or are they out in general market for us?
Both. I would say the majority of it, though, is in federal agencies, so you could say it's out in the market.
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is carried unanimously. Before you read, Supervisor Burke, we failed to notice in the agenda posting that this next item, 718 on repair of Bliss Road, will require a 2/3 vote of the full board. So with that, back to you, Supervisor Burke. It's the pleasure of the reader. It's in her hands.
I shall cut it short. All right. Item 7-18. To the honorable members of La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, approval of intergovernmental agreement for the repair of Bliss Road, whereas Bliss Road suffered damage on August 14th, 2010, whereas the city of La Crosse remains responsible for Bliss Road, whereas Bliss Road is also the most traveled route used by visitors, whereas the project to repair Bliss Road is estimated to cost $400,000, and the Wisconsin Department of Transportation will reimburse the city of La Crosse 75% or $300,000 of the repair costs through a flood grant, which will leave approximately $100,000 of the repair costs to be paid in local matching dollars by the affected municipalities. Whereas if the city of La Crosse commits to contributing the engineering cost estimated at $60,000 and 50% of the approximately $100,000 of repair costs not covered by the state grant, then the county of La Crosse, town of Shelby, and town of Madary will also commit one-time only funds in the amount of 50% of the balance, or $50,000, which will be divided among the three municipalities as follows: the county of La Crosse, $16,666, the town of Shelby, $25,000, and the town of Madary, $8,333. Where it is the best interest of cities of the citizens of the city, county, and towns of Shelby and Madary, and the tourists of the region, for the municipalities to work together. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the county board hereby authorizes the county board chair to sign the intergovernmental agreement for the repair of Bliss Road after approval of the corporation council, which authorized the county's participation in sharing the costs of these Bliss Road repairs. contingent upon the agreement, the commitment of the City of La Crosse, Town of Shelby, and Town of Madary to also sign this agreement. Further be it resolved that the Finance Department is authorized to transfer $16,666 from excess sales tax revenue to an appropriate account and make such payment for the repair of Bliss Road to carry out the intent of this resolution upon signing of the intergovernmental agreement by all the participating municipalities. Fiscal note, the county share of the payment to repair Bliss Road will come from excess sales tax revenues, which will have a balance of $1,878,008 at year-end 2011. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Kyle. Supervisor Cotter.
No, I want to second.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you wanted to speak. I thought you wanted to speak. Supervisor Path.
I was just wondering, thank you, Madam Chairman. I was just wondering if I thought, am I speaking in it now?
Yep.
Can you hear me now? Yeah. The amount here, which is a small amount, was the repair of Bliss Road hinging on the county being a partner in this? Would they have done it or not? A $500,000 deal if they went to got the $16,666, or how did this come about to being? Was this a make or break situation for the city?
Obviously, council members can speak for themselves and probably give you a perspective, but for years this has been a difficult issue for the city because most of their residents don't access that road for anything other than tourism. The vast majority of the traffic there is commuter, which are residents of our two towns of Shelby and Madary. This is a long-standing issue. Back to the prior mayor and the prior town chair, I had been involved in trying to figure out ways to move collaboration ahead, had not been as successful as, frankly, when the new town chair was elected in town of Shelby. Mr. Candell and of course, Tara Johnson, representing that area as well, were very involved in these discussions, and it's an amazing amount of collaboration that came together. Whether or not the City of La Crosse would have proceeded or not without this was really in doubt. I think there's been some serious debate and discussion by the council of whether or not they should proceed with this, and that was part of what pushed this along. In fact, the town of Shelby had actually budgeted up to $25,000 to try to provide a different way of actually having a signaled light and not to repair the road, and was offering that as an olive branch to the City of La Crosse. City of La Crosse was not interested, as I understand it, in leaving the road unrepaired and having some kind of liability issue of having a single lane only regulated by a light. And so that's part of that discussion. But
Mr. O'Malley, I'm just going to ask, we only have one council County Board Supervisor who's still here. Maybe we can just ask them to, I don't know, Supervisor Cotter, if you're in a position.
I was almost
I just heard him ask a question about whether or not the city was going to do it,
my conclusion is that it was in doubt whether or not they would. I can't predict what the council would have done or not done, but it's been an ongoing history for trying to involve more than just the city in that repair.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. Really, it's as has been stated, it's been a bone of contention over the years, and this whole issue is much bigger than the fixing of Bliss Road, because over the years there's been unfortunate history, and so I think it's really important and valuable that due to the changing circumstances, as has already been mentioned, plus the fact that it is in the best interests of the region to have Bliss Road back functioning. Without the olive branch from the chair of the town of Shelby, it would very likely have sat unrepaired through this winter. Our staff wanted to see it done because they knew that if it wasn't repaired, it would only get worse. But the mood of the council, without this effort, I don't think it would have been done this winter. And so everybody deserves kudos in relation to this. And hopefully it's the beginning of many more situations of where we look at what's good for all of us rather than what is only good for one. Thank you.
Back to you, Supervisor Paffett. We were just trying to get that specific question answered.
So this is a start of collaboration then between the city and the county when the county has problems in an outlying area or not? Or
who are you directing your question at?
Whoever may be able to answer it. I'm just wondering how this is going to work down the road, because setting a precedence like this. Not that I have anything. The 16,000, 16.
Very briefly, the county will. The county, under my administration, and I think the leadership of this board will do everything we can to collaborate on anything we can. And if there are policy decisions that require funding, they'll come back here. But we've got a strong record from West Salem to throughout the whole community on Alaska on issues that we belong as a third party or a mediator or collaborator. We're going to convene those meetings, and I believe that's consistent with what the prior chairman has done on issue after issue to the full county board. We've got a history. Whether or not we can always afford to provide some dollars, that will be your decision, but we're always going to try to do what's best for the entire community as much as we can.
Thank you.
Supervisor Bina.
Aye, thank you, Madam Chair. I had questions along the same lines, and I thought maybe, Leon, you were going to ask about getting the money out there to repair our roads that we needed to repair in the county, because we got some sitting there that had major accidents on it, and they've been sitting there for 3 or 4 years, and we haven't fixed them yet, on OA, for example. And I guess I'm kind of amazed, so I had to hope my comments are going to be along the same lines, that when the town of Washington, Barry, Bangor, or Greenfield come in, we put together a deal also. I can go back quite a few years. I had friends on the county board years ago, 40, 50 years ago. That was a county road. And that was went up to Grand Edge Bluff. And when the city annexed the golf course and other things out there, it became a city road. And I can remember one supervisor telling me that they wanted us out of there, and they got now the state aids for that road, and that they were going to take it over.
Supervisor Bina, if I might, I do believe that this actually was a town of Madary Road.
Okay.
And never a county highway.
Never.
Or never a county road. But
the
go on. I just want to clarify.
When we started reading about this in the paper, it became a topic of a discussion in the out county big time. And I did not originate it, but just for the heck of it, I put together 4 sheets of paper, and I did a little survey in 3 townships out there. I have here 100 signatures of people that I had talked to or that came in contact with this. There are 2 people from the town of Barry area who would have... Okay, my questionnaire says... Should the county help pay for Bliss Road, and how much? Name, municipality, $100,000, $50,000, or less, or more, or zero? That's what my questionnaire said, and I can give it to you if you want to see it, but it's probably not going to do any good here tonight, but I have it here anyhow. I probably could have got 1,000 or 2,000 signatures if I would have went over the whole county. Because the rural residents are concerned about where we're going and how we're getting there and the use of our money, and especially tax money that could be used to lower our deficit or something, or pay our bills or something else. So two people from Barry said $50,000. I ran into 4 people... 2 couples from the city of La Crosse who said, yeah, $50,000, give it to us. Go ahead. The rest of the people on this sheet said zero, and they're all residents from out county. So we are, what we should have done probably is what Madary did, is to ask for donations. They got quite a few, according to what Bob told me. It would have been kind of nice to... do something, and it is nice to collaborate, and it's when it starts costing us some money, that's when the out county gets a little concerned. So I'm going to be voting against this tonight, because my constituents are really concerned about this.
Supervisor Mettinger.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairperson. I hadn't planned on talking on this, and I was hoping that it would just pass without any discussion. And I hope we don't get into a situation here where we start dragging up old grievances and talking about, you know, we got to vote against the city and all that kind of stuff. I realize there's 17 of us that live in the city of La Crosse, and we need how many, 22 or 23 votes tonight? I don't know what the number is. It's a pretty big number. But I think, really, you know the number?
Let's get an answer. Do you want an answer before you keep going? Or
no, I keep okay. going. I really think, I mean, I think we all know this, is that the future requires that we work together. We've got to set aside some of this stuff from the past where we fought each other. I wasn't going to say anything about the town of Shelby, but I'm telling you that in the past, the town of Shelby has been very difficult to work with. And elections have consequences. The town of Shelby now has a new chairperson who is very willing to reach his hand over the line in cooperation. The town of Madary is also willing to do that. They see the benefit to them for doing this. And I think it's as Audrey said, the money is relatively insignificant. It is the symbolism of finally working together after so much bitterness and negativity. And I'm telling you, I think if this resolution fails tonight, it's going to be really devastating to future collaboration. I think the message will be, frankly, you're on your own. I think that's the message we're hearing from too many people these days. And we're all in it together, and I really do hope that the vast majority of this county board votes yes tonight. I think to vote no would really send a horrible message. And I think the city may just decide to make that back off, and I wouldn't be surprised if that road just doesn't get done. I'm not threatening. I have no idea. But the message may be very negative.
Supervisor Wood.
I will pass. Thank you.
Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I think the collaboration is fine, I think, as far as being the conduit to put a plan like this together. I'm just not convinced that it's the right use of county money. We have, over $22 million worth of road work to be done on our county roads. Is that right, Mr. O'Malley?
It's actually in excess of $30 million.
Okay. So, I mean, and while 17 may not seem a lot, you know, would we have done this if it was 40, if it was 60, if it was 100, if it was a million? I hate to use the cheapest, won't go there. But I mean, at some point, the dollar amount or the principle of it becomes more important. The other thing I noticed is we keep talking about excess sales tax revenue. And I think that's an unfortunate name. It almost makes our constituents think that this is not money. And I think, or that it's not money that comes from taxes. I think rather a levy replacement dollar is probably a more fair way to call this. Because if we didn't spend this $17,000, it could go to either reduce a levy. So I think in all of our discussions of excess sales tax, that's really a misnomer, and we're kidding our constituents to think that it's not either property tax dollars or money that could be used to reduce property taxes. So thank you.
Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I voted for this in committee, and I realize the city is going to make the final decision, but I did bring up a point. When people give money, they want input. We give money to the airport. This started a long time ago. They let us have somebody on the airport board. When the county or Shelby or Madary gives money, obviously Bliss Road is going to be a long-term problem. They even told us this isn't the last time this is going to happen. At least Shelby or our county highway commissioner, or if we want to review the plans, we should at least be able to give some input. Obviously, the city could say thanks for your input and fix it the way they want, but I think historically, obviously, with the problems they have, people that give money want to get their 2 cents in, and I don't have a problem with that. Because they're given some money, they should have some input. And I spoke to you about it maybe a few weeks back or whenever, and I thought that was kind of an understanding on how they're going to this repair and maybe the long-term solution on however they were going to kind of get together and come to maybe an agreement. Was that my understanding correctly? Somehow it should show in the minutes or...
There definitely was input, and Mr. O'Malley can probably talk about the highway commissioners looking at the, reviewing the plans and so forth.
Yes, we had at Tara's initiation, we brought in the retired commissioner, Denny Osgood, and our new highway commissioner, reviewed the plans in detail as well as walked the specific area that's going to be repaired with Town of Shelby, a new town chair. We've had a lot of input and a lot of involvement. The critical part here is we don't want to be in a position where we're taking on any ongoing responsibility beyond this one agreement. And that the hope is that we've been demonstrated by the residents of Madary and also Shelby that they may be interested in some kind of a long-term agreement that the county just then facilitates in the future. I don't anticipate us having a long-term role other than to continue to convene because our residents in Shelby and Madary that are also county residents stepped up and said they have an interest in this. And by helping to facilitate that, my hope, and I know Tim Candle's hope, and the Town of Madary's board's hope, is that we do have some kind of a long-term agreement that goes beyond this. But we need to take baby steps first, and the small amount of money that the county contributes and the role that we played to convene this may get that beyond that. I would not anticipate that we have an ongoing commitment to this other than to keep the parties working together.
I have Supervisor Cotter, Kyle, Doyle, Cruz, Meyer, Ferries, Burns, and now Schrader, just so everybody knows. And next up would be Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. I just want to make a point that has maybe been overlooked tonight. The City of La Crosse residents also are county taxpayers. And so it is all of us in this together. And whether we're talking about taking care of the situation out in Bangor or whether we're talking about other situations, if we can just look at what's in the best interests of the people of the county, there are people in the county who are being grossly inconvenienced at the moment because Bliss Road is not available for them to get to and from work. And so can't we just please go forward in faith once that we can work together as a complete unit and do something that's a win-win situation for county residents, city residents, and the city still is certainly carrying its share. In addition to the figures that were mentioned earlier, the city also has picked up all the 70,000 of preliminary costs, apart from the 100,000 that we're going to be doing. We're not complaining. We are reaching out, hopefully, to be greeted with a receptive audience. And thank you,
Supervisor Kyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This district is 19th district. Both the Shelby and Madary people are in my district. I contributed to it. I don't want my check back.
Supervisor Doyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I live in the town of Onalaska, and if I get up Bliss Road once a year, I'd be surprised. When I was in high school, we used to have beer parties up there all the time, but I'm beyond that stage of my life, and so I can just hang out at home and do that. But
and I do.
When I first got on this board, and I was past drinking age even then, back in 1986, the attitude was, and especially my esteemed colleague in front of me, his father used to say, if it was good for Onalaska, I'm opposed. And I loved Don Menninger, but he was wrong on that. And that was the attitude that we had way back when. And my predecessor as chair, Jim Ursham, said that's wrong. And I think he set a very good precedent. I have had tried to do when I was chair, that type of thing. And I commend our new chair for her efforts in this process, because this is a great way to start your time as a county board chair, because it sends exactly the message that we have been trying to send, that we are a county board. We are not Steve Doyle is the 28th district. We are a county board, and we should look at the interests of the county. You know, a little while ago, the village of Rockland ran into some problems. We helped bail them out. Town of Campbell is having some problems with the whole skipper liner thing. We've been helping them out. Town of Onalaska on a number of things over the years. We've helped them out. Village of West Salem with the industrial park, now business park. We've helped them out. We've worked together. If every one of us says, what's in it for me, or what's in it for my district, if that's your attitude, then expect your colleagues on this board to say the same thing. So, Mr. Bina, if you say, what's in it for town of Washington, when something comes up that is for the town of Washington in the future, should we say the same thing to you? I would hope not. I would hope that we are past that stage on this board and that we're looking at what is in the best interest of our county. You know, Granddad's Bluff, they say, is what, the second most popular site in the state of Wisconsin for a natural site. In the state of Wisconsin, this is a tourist attraction. People come to our community and pay sales tax that goes into the coffers that benefit our entire county. It's not just helping the city of La Crosse or town of Medary or the town of Shelby. It is helping all of us. This is a good project. $17,000 is peanuts for the goodwill that we are creating among our municipalities and for the attraction that we can now continue to provide for people throughout the Midwest who want to come to visit our community. I feel very comfortable that the residents of my district, District 28, would be very happy to contribute to this project, and I am voting yes. Thank you.
Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you. Supervisor Doyle very eloquently already expressed pretty much everything I was going to say, except I'd like to add just one thought to it. Granddad's Bluff is a regional treasure. It's a county treasure. Bliss Road is a very scenic drive that is also a county treasure. I use that drive quite often. I live in the town of Onalaska, so I'm not a Shelby or Medary resident. I use that town, that road quite often when it's open. So I think it's rather myopic to think it's just a Shelby-Medary issue. And I think, as Supervisor Doyle said, the tourist dollars benefit the entire region, and I think the entire region should be willing to see to it that that road is kept up and that that treasure is accessible. Thank you.
Supervisor Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve, both Steves, remember back in January of 2010, I asked a very question about whether it was a county road, and we went back 38 years and found it never was. So my feeling is it never was. I will be supporting the repair of Bliss Road. Thank you.
Supervisor Ferries.
Thank you. I was going to echo exactly what the last few speakers said. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe this is a compelling use of tax revenue dollars, sales tax revenue dollars. I want to say I highly scrutinize how we use that money. But what really convinced me is this whole thing about, and it was eloquently said by many people, if every party would have acted in their own self-interest, this project may have not have come to fruition. So really, that's to me, that's what it's about.
Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. As you know, the town of Campbell and the city of La Crosse have had some contentious times. And enough of those so that I pulled all of our town officials, except for one person I couldn't get a hold of. And I was very surprised. They were very supportive of this, except for one person. And the rest of them said, use your judgment. I see nothing wrong with it. So from the problems that we've had between this town of Campbell and the city of La Crosse, I commend the people, the town of Campbell, for supporting this. And I would also like to commend Tim Candle for his efforts. He called me. I've known Tim for a lot of years, but he called me and we had a nice conversation. So I will also be supporting this.
Supervisor Sobranek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this point, I believe everybody knows how they're going to vote, so I call the question.
There's a motion to close debate. Moved by Supervisor Sobranek, seconded by Supervisor Meyer. There was one remaining speaker on the list. That was Supervisor Bina, just as a point of information. Pass. Well, then we're ready to vote. Isn't that lovely? And just a reminder that this will take a two-thirds vote, so it will require 24 to pass. Oh, it was moved and seconded to close debate. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One, no's are Ebert, Weers, Friedland. The motion to close debate has passed, and we are ready to vote. Let's do this one on the computer, since it's requiring a two-thirds vote. And there'll be 1 second. We need 24, because it's of the full board, non-budgeted item. And we're down.
Two?
We're waiting for it to come up on the computer. Thank you for your patience. Yes, vote yes if you are in favor of the resolution. Huh? Sorry, I thought that was Abby. The vote is 31 in favor, 2 opposed. The motion carries. Anything else for you, Supervisor Burke? Thank you. Supervisor Hampson, Health and Human Services Board.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This will not be anywhere near as exciting or monumental as the last discussion.
Thank you.
I have item number 719 was the second reading of an ordinance change to create a mental health recovery services advisory council. In the analysis, it tells you that there are two committees currently, Community Options Program and the Comprehensive Community Service Program, and these two will be merged together. The number of members on the MHRS Advisory Board shall be 21 to be appointed by the County Board Chair and approved by the County Board. The members are listed there. The duties of this Advisory Council include providing oversight and feedback to all mental health services to ensure compliance with statutory requirements. The MHRS Advisory Council shall report to the Health and Human Services Board. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Hampson, seconded by Supervisor Brockmiller. Discussion. Supervisor Ebert.
Yeah, is there any chance you want to just do the executive committee right away for this unit? Because with that many, we always seem then to end up setting up an executive committee. In other words, we just did an executive board. We have
absolutely not.
You mean of the?
Yeah.
Wait, hang on. Is your point an executive committee of this?
Correct. Because
as has been done with Criminal Justice Management Council and Family Policy Board, that was your point.
Correct. It might be just as easy to do it.
No, it doesn't sound like that's the desire of the committee. It's not setting it up. So,
thank you.
Any other discussion on the ordinance? All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. The ordinance is approved. And just a note from the suggestion made by Supervisor Richmond, I know it's very prescribed, the membership, this is very prescribed, but if you're interested, you should contact the County Board Chair. Suggestions for future agenda items. Supervisor Geary.
I brought this up a year ago. Obviously, it did no good. The Wisconsin Counties Association has again published the official directory. I think it is a waste of money. Information is available online. I think you could probably find it faster online. Do we have to draft a resolution to take to the convention in September, or how do we relay this information to them that I think...
I did follow up.
Mr. O'Malley.
Madam Chair, members of the board, I did follow up. What they assured me was that this did not utilize any, and I'm not saying I agree with it, I'm just telling you what WCA told me, was this does not utilize any of our membership funds or revenues. It's paid for by the sponsors. And I expressed the same exact thing that you asked me to do. It didn't go anywhere, but I did not drop the ball. I brought your objection to the president.
So as a future agenda item, what is it that you're asking for, Supervisor
Geary?
No,
I didn't know if we needed a resolution to go to the Wisconsin Counties Associations. I dispute what they say. What they're saying is the advertisers are paying for it.
Well, okay.
We belong to WMIC. We pay a fee. they're one of the advertisers. So inadvertently, they're charging us to advertise in something that I don't think anybody wants.
So as a future agenda item, we could refer this to the legislative committee that would pass it on to WCA. Supervisor Mettinger, other future agenda item suggestions?
Yeah, you could call them advertisers or you could call them special interest groups, but somebody else is paying for it. I would like to maybe, I don't know if it's too early or not, but perhaps get an update from the sheriff on how the new jail is working out at some point in the policy committee next few months.
Somewhere. Yeah.
Thank you. Supervisor Feehan.
Yes, I'd like to see a report on employment at the county over the last decade, and perhaps it'd be broken out by collectively bargained positions and non-collectively bargained positions.
So you're saying county employees, not in all of La Crosse County. Employees of the county.
County government, yeah. Okay. Yes.
Supervisor Billings.
I'll pass.
Supervisor Mettinger.
Could I ask, I think that's Mr. Feehan has a good idea, but could we also look at the diversity of the workforce for the county, males, females, minorities in that presentation?
Sure, and we've provided that to you. You also have it as page 158 of your CAFR that you just received is the total employment of the county. And may not be as precise as maybe you had some additional questions, but it's included. The 10-year analysis is in there just coincidentally. The diversity, we have provided that as a report in our written report that comes to you, so we can certainly update that.
It sounded like there was additional information about breakup between collective
bargaining
and so forth.
Since you have the information, it's in the packet that you have right now. I will still follow up on the request, but I just thought you have a way to do.
Yeah, a starting point.
Page 158 right now is in the CAFR.
Supervisor Feehan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I reviewed last year's report in that document, and it was only through 2009, and the information isn't broken down, as I mentioned, and as Supervisor Mettinger mentioned. I'd like to see much more detailed information. Also, I believe some other supervisors have referenced a transfer of county employees to the state office about 3 or 4 years ago, so I'd be curious. Social service workers, weren't they? Yeah, maybe some other people.
You're referencing
can comment
the
that, but I just like a more detailed.
CMO maybe the care management CMO. Organization.
Yes.
Maybe?
So if we could just have a detailed report, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, Supervisor Wood.
Thank you, and I do appreciate those kinds of issues, but to come before the board. But here's what I would like to know. Along with that, I would like to know the amount of time that these kinds of detailed reports take, especially when we're dealing with next year's budget already. So I'm asking about the amount of time that these very detailed reports, and if perhaps there were not some minutes of meetings or something that supervisors could be led to get this information on their own rather than taking more staff time. I think the more information, the better. But again, I think we have to look at the priorities that we are asking our scaled down employees to do. So I'm not quite sure how to go with that, but
I'm not either. But as a cautionary note, I'm going to ask supervisors: do not log out of your computers, please, until the adjournment vote has been taken. It messes up the system up here. So
I think I'm going to ask is if and when this comes as a fulfilled request by a county board member, that along with that comes the amount of time that our county staff has to put in to make those reports when the same information might be available in minutes of meetings, of past meetings when supervisors might not have been on the board.
Any other future agenda item suggestions? Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if for future agenda item that Gary would provide the indirect costs for the various departments that he promised about 10 months ago. Thank you.
All right,
remember, you said
nice
you'd give
here.
Us
let's
an estimate
nice.
Of the indirect costs for all 30 programs.
Indirect cost report also will add to the list. That'll be, I'm sure, part of the budget discussions as well. I have two quick announcements. It is painfully clear to me sitting in this seat for the last couple of hours. My hearing is much better than Steve Doyle's. And by that I mean that there is a lot of clutter in the air in this room during debate and discussion. And I'm just asking for my sake, if that can be kept to a minimum, because it is very distracting, especially in the front rows. I'm just mentioning that because that's where my hearing is most keen, and I'm trying to be lighthearted about it, but I don't know how he put up with it before. Anyway, so my hearing is better than Supervisor Doyle's, and since I mentioned his name, I would invite all supervisors and staff, and we've lost the rest of the crowd here, join me at the bodega to raise a glass to immediate past chair Steve Doyle to thank him for his service to this august group. So if anybody's interested, I welcome that you join us over at the bodega afterward. And with that, Supervisor Sobranek.
Who wants to know who's buying?
Thank you, Madam Chair. After listening to all the discussion on the conditions about the conditional use permits, it made me think. Imagine if there were no hypothetical situations. And just a point to ponder, never argue with a fool. People might not be able to tell the difference. And with that, I move to adjourn.
It's been moved to adjourn, seconded by Supervisor Brockmiller. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. We are adjourned. And now you can turn your computers off, please, if you would.